about. So easy.
You gotta put it in perspective.
What are we laughing about?
Kevin.
I don't get it.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy.
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
It's like you can't have one without the other, you know? Like I'm equal parts God and the devil. A cloak of shame covers this man, and only supreme light will wash my body clean. But how could that light possibly reach me with the thick clouds of indecency that surround my poor soul? So I carry my wrongdoings on my back like some kind of tormented hiker lost in the hills of misfortune, looking desperately for that peak to rescue him from the valley of depraved habitual self-pleasuring. But again, I find nothing except for sweaty, devastated loneliness and 1,000 judging eyes staring back at me from the cover of a stolen Victoria's Secret catalog. I didn't take your mail, Mrs. Pemberton. Stop asking me that. Leave me alone.
And now,
Satan's pretty cool.
Our feature presentation.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. All right. Is that slam poetry? Is that what's passing for slam poetry today?
No, that was a guy being interviewed on the news, Kevin.
Wow.
Who's
I
a
should
Satanist.
Watch the news.
You don't. I know you don't watch the news because you're a kid, right. But this was a Satanist who was one of several who showed up to the unveiling of a new statue of Satan in Detroit a couple of weeks ago. It was on the news.
Oh, that's the one that they did like at midnight? They ran in and put the statue up and ran away?
That's right. And he was very excited about Satan and very excited about his life, except he did seem to have some unresolved issues about touching himself. Sound like he had little problems there with that.
Didn't seem a little odd, but okay.
But how much do you want to beat him up when you hear him talk? I know there's room for all sorts of different kinds of people, and you don't have to agree with everything. Not because of the Satanism, just because of what a douchebag, excuse me, what a bad person he sounds like.
Right.
Right? I mean, didn't he sound like total Ren Faire?
Yeah.
Like one of those guys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I got no time for him, but. He's funny.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It is Wednesday, the 26th of August.
How are we going to talk about anything today but Ali's Periscope? Mm. How are we going to get to all the other stuff on the schedule?
Yeah. We are going to cancel it. And we're just going to go wall to wall.
I know we're doing it next hour, but I'm bursting.
Yeah.
I'm just bursting to talk about it.
Periscope, nope.
Yeah, there's not enough emphasis on the nope.
I have so many questions.
Allie did debut her first ever Periscope last night.
Oh, no! This is a colossal disaster.
That was a lot of the comments.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people said that. A
lot of people.
I thought it was great.
Yes, you did.
You did.
Because look how good it made my Periscopes look.
I thought it was great, too. But we have to admit we love bad.
Oh, so bad.
Yeah.
So much.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that. Let me get started with this, though, as we work our way into a Wednesday Kevin and Bean show. Did I bring in for you the story of the guy who got the penis transplant in South Africa a couple of months ago? Did I bring that one up?
I can't remember.
I believe so.
Briefly, if you missed it, doctors in South Africa gave a 21-year-old man a penis transplant. It doesn't say who donated his penis. I'm assuming it came from a cadaver, like a lot of organs.
I hope. Who's going to give it up while they're alive?
He, by the way, this was eye-opening for me. He lost his penis in a ceremony that a lot of young men have in that country when they turn 18. They have some sort of a circumcision ceremony,
mm-hmm.
and apparently a lot of people are really bad at it because...
Oh, no.
Yes, it's a transition from boyhood to adulthood in parts of South Africa, and apparently hundreds of boys are maimed or die each year in the traditional initiation ceremony.
Oh, my.
Why don't they get better at it?
Right.
That seems like a pretty big downside.
We circumcise much smaller penises in America in little tiny babies, and we don't kill anybody.
Wow.
Right? I mean,
Are they drinking? Are they using a machete? What's going on?
Oh. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Again, what's my biggest complaint about the news?
Not enough information.
And this is be a perfect example where they have some sort of a little sidebar that says what the problem is with why they can't circumcise and not cut the guy's junk off.
That's
okay?
The problem. They're sidebars. Shouldn't be drinking during this.
Okay, so that's South Africa, and that happened a couple of months ago. Now, the reason I bring that up is to say that was a human penile transplant. Now here's a young man in England, Scotland. His name was Muhammad Abed. When he was 6 years old, you guys, he was involved in a horrific car accident. He was struck by a car and dragged nearly 600 feet. Oh. It ripped his penis and one of his testicles off.
Oh.
This week, he got a bionic penis.
Yay! Define, please.
A University of London team has spent more than 3 years crafting a new 8-inch wang out of skin grafts culled from his forearm that become erect by mechanically pumping fluid into them. The pump is activated by a button located near his remaining testicle. When you want a bit of action, you press the on button. When you're finished, you press another button. It just takes seconds.
No.
Doctors
what?
Have told Doctors have told him to keep practicing. And by the way, they also tell him that his prosthesis should be sufficient for Abad to start a family if he so chooses.
Really?
Wow.
Which to me means they figured out a way to hook it up to his remaining testicle.
What?
That is pretty darn impressive medicine right there, isn't
Agreed.
It? Yes.
A penis that works and works. I mean, not just physically it works. It also works for its intended purpose. So, I don't know. I'm just amazed by both of those stories.
What?
So, hopefully there'll be updates soon and we'll find out how those young men are doing.
Let's talk about today's Kevin DeBeecho, shall we?
Excuse me. Sit down. You weren't called. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down. You haven't been called. Go back to Univision.
Oh, jeez. That happened.
It did happen.
That happened, yeah. On today's show, we're going to talk about Ali's Periscope. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with the showbiz beat next. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. It is 5:53.
Ralph Garman.
Yeah.
Welcome in, my friend. What's going
right?
on?
Right? Come on now.
How's it feel to be opening up for Ali's Periscope conversation today?
Best of luck, everyone.
Did you see it?
No.
Oh,
you're going to love it so much, Ralph.
No.
It's so good.
I don't actively pursue bad like you people do.
Yeah, we do that. That's
you
true.
You go out of your way.
Yeah, we
to subject yourself to bad,
but not just okay bad. It's got to be bad.
Yeah, the creation of bad, the following of bad, the wallowing in bad seems to be your theme.
Yeah,
what you like. It's not so much me. I'm nuts that way. I like to find good things.
Okay, you say that, and I hear you, and I know you believe what you're saying, but if you're not seeking out bad, why do you keep coming to the Kevin and Bean Show every day?
Daddy's got a mortgage. That's why.
Daddy's not referring to yourself as daddy.
Daddy likey.
It's like 10% better
daddy
than me.
Daddy likey foodie. Daddy likey Edie.
All right. Well, show us how it's done well, then, would you?
Well, I'll tell you who's going to show you how it's done. Another celebrity outed by the Ashley Madison hacking scandal.
Yeah!
Another huge name in show business. You know, we've just one after another, we've been finding out all these celebrities who had these accounts on Ashley Madison. And now Josh Takeman, everybody. Josh Takeman.
Are you kidding?
Right?
Oh,
are you shocked?
Josh Takeman, what? My hero.
First, Josh Duggar.
Right.
Right. Yep.
Now Josh Takeman. Everyone on Ashley Madison's named Josh. Giovanni Lavalle. Yesterday we talked about him.
Snooki's
huge
husband.
Stars are being outed by this Ashley Madison.
A+.
Now, Ruff, obviously we all know who Josh Takeman is.
Sure,
but just for
right.
the benefit, if there's a listener out there who maybe hasn't heard the name, could you please
Kevin,
share?
Over to you.
He's an artist. He's a musical artist.
Oh, so good.
And he has a solo career now, and he used to be in a band.
Yeah, the band's name was?
Wrong Thumb. He was in a very short-lived band. Very short-lived.
Not even Worse Thumb?
Right.
Is it Worse? No, this is a cover band for Worse Thumb.
All right, who is it?
I don't know.
Josh Takeman is one of the husbands of one of the Real Housewives of New York City. Kristen Takeman.
Okay.
He has admitted that he did create the account. This is my favorite. He goes, I signed up for the account foolishly and ignorantly with a group of friends. You know, you get together.
You know how you fool around?
You and your friends start fooling around and say, hey, guys, wouldn't it be funny if we all signed up for that cheating website so we can have sex behind our wives' backs? But it was a party game.
That's funny.
He says, in reality, he's a humble, respectful, loyal stand-up guy.
Josh has apologized to any embarrassment or pain he's brought his wife and family.
Now, those housewife skanks, they deserve to look crazy. It's their punishment for being such needy whores.
Right? Meanwhile, Bravo's just rubbing their hands together up there in their big offices. Just they cannot wait to play this out on television. So, by the way, I thought this was interesting. They've broken down the majority of these hack victims, the Ashley Madison subscribers, by state.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. The number one most unfaithful state, according to how many people from that state use the Ashley Madison website.
I don't know how you would even guess. Vegas?
You got a 1 in 50 no. shot.
That's your favorite state, Las Vegas.
California? I don't know. I don't know how to guess that. Shut up. Come on, Ralph. We're counting on you to help us out at the end of this.
Hey, we've lost Ralph.
Come on, Ralph. It's not the only state I could think of, by the way.
It's just, not a state.
Not a state. That's
Las
why we're
Vegas
laughing.
Not a state. That's the point, Kevin.
That's
well, when I said what state, you said, I don't know, Vegas? The point would be that Vegas would not be any state.
This is why you fail.
That's why we're laughing. Not that your guess was bad. That you aren't aware what a state is. Sing on?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it Milkbone?
Nope, so far.
It's not?
No. I don't see that on the list.
All right, I have not seen this article, but I'm going to take a guess based on the fact that you even asked the question that it's going to be a state we'll be surprised at because they're religious and you would expect them to be
Ooh,
faithful.
The South,
and,
good.
So I'm going to go with the South, and I'm going to say...
Good logic, Bean. You've good. Got me. You got me by the shorties.
I'm going to say Kentucky.
Close, in the region.
Mississippi.
Alabama.
Alabama.
Alabama, number one most unfaithful state, according to...
How about that?
Sign up for Ashley Madison.
That's the state that probably goes to church more than any other state, too.
How about that? And in Alabama, it's even, I think it's twice as bad. Not only are you cheating on your wife, but also your cousin. And that's got to be doubly hurtful when you know your wife your whole life with all those family gatherings, and then you still do that to her behind her back. Although, to
Vegas.
To be fair... The state with the least number of members on Ashley Madison was West Virginia.
Okay. Oh, that's a surprise.
So not everyone in the South is a cheating, lying whore. Here's a... Real quickly. Most unfaithful states. Connecticut, New Jersey, District of Columbia. Third. No surprise there. All the politicians right. banging around behind their wives' backs. Colorado and Alabama. And then the most devoted states... South Dakota, Maine, stop it, Allie, Idaho, Mississippi, and West Virginia. So there you go. Idaho, you think they'd be very slutty in that state. Right there in their name, Idaho.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Vegas, that state.
He didn't get it.
Nope.
When we were laughing.
He thought it was just a bad
thing. Here was my mind process. I was thinking, I was moving on past Vegas. Yeah. That was already a throwaway guess.
Right.
So I didn't realize that it wasn't a state. So I was thinking California. I was thinking, like, how would you guess what state?
Mm.
It did take me about 45 seconds and Ralph explaining it to me to understand that Vegas is not a state. Back to you.
Today's celebrity birthdays, garbage singer Shirley Manson. Oh, come on now with the Shirley Manson. Just the best. 49 years old.
Coming back in pretty soon.
Ralph's got a huge crush on her.
I do. I have always had a huge crush on Shirley Manson. Adrian Young from No Doubt. Good guy. Nice man. 46 years old today. Melissa McCarthy's 45. Chris Pine. Allie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
35 years old today. Macaulay Culkin, also 35. Comedian John Mulaney is 33 years old. And actor Dylan O'Brien from Teen Wolf and The Maze Runner. Soon to be seen in Scorch Trials. Scorch Trials. The sequel to Maze Runner. 24 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Is it time for Ali's Periscope? Can we talk
Not
about
yet.
Ali's Periscope?
Nope. Come Not on. Yet. We're going to do it in a couple minutes.
Okay. Hey, Beer Mug.
What up?
Welcome to the show, my friend. We have a job for you.
Tell me.
Apparently there's a new sport, and this is legitimate, and it is sanctioned by somebody, and it's being covered on ESPN, and they just had their world championships in Austin recently, and a Canadian won it. And that's not acceptable to me. Is it a Canadian holds a world record?
No.
Muggs, you're the man who is going to be the new world champion of the beer mile.
Yeah! I first heard Jim Rome talking about this. He was talking about the beer mile a lot, and I was like, I don't even know what the beer mile is. Mm-hmm.
The beer mile is a thing where each competitor drinks 4 cans of beer and runs 4 laps on a track. So in other words, you chug a beer, a 12-ounce beer, then you run a quarter mile, then you drink another beer, run another quarter mile, and then repeat until you're done with a mile. And apparently there are quite a few rules to this thing that we're going to have to dive deep on and learn. Because you are, for instance, as I understand it, Kevin, you watched the video. You are allowed to vomit, but only in certain zones?
Yeah, you can't vomit in the drinking zone.
Huh.
It's sort of weird. But they have rules about you can vomit. It's just where you vomit. They can dock points. You can kick you out of the race. It's very, very strict.
Now you can also pick your beer, any beer that you choose that you want to drink. According to the rules in front of me at beermile.com, it has to be a canned beer, and it has to be at least a 5% alcohol level,
right?
12 ounces, and you also cannot use you can't get an advantage by allowing the beer to pour at a faster rate by using one of those wide mouth bottles or cans.
Mm.
Gotcha. So they have rules like that. You can't tamper with your beer. In any way, no shotgunning or puncturing of the can, except for opening of the can on the tab at the top. I mean, there are more rules about the drinking than there are about the running.
Sure.
it does seem like. But what a great sport. Aren't you already in your mind fast-forwarding in your head to 25 years from now when this is in the Olympics?
I want beer everything. I want all sports to be drinking beer. That would make it so much more interesting.
Especially that one. What's the Olympic one where you ski and shoot? That's one that requires alcohol.
That'd be pretty awesome.
What's that called?
Cross-country ski archery?
Yes.
Because, you know, archery, the one that you use guns for.
Oh, actual shotguns. I don't know the name of that.
All right.
So anyway, as I mentioned, ESPN covered this, and I think we have some tape on a recap of the recent championship, and then we're going to tell you how we need your help for this.
Okay. This is on ESPN, but the announcer is very, 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 very not ESPN. He's dull as the day is long, talking about the beer mile.
Welcome to the inaugural Beer Mile World Classic, featuring the only 3 men in history to officially eclipse the 5-minute beer mile mark. While Kent got off to a clean start in the elite men's race, swallowing his Amsterdam Blonde with dispatch, Nielsen and Harris both struggled with warm beer.
What are they playing? What's the music behind this?
They're trying
this?
To amp him up, maybe, with the background.
It's not working at all.
No, it's not.
Which is infamously difficult to get down.
He's talking about, I think he's talking about warm beer there.
During the second lap, Nielsen slowed noticeably and was later disqualified for having too much Budweiser remaining in his 4 discarded cans. Harris, meanwhile, suffered a reversal of fortune in the third lap chugging zone and was assessed a dream-shattering penalty lap.
Dream-shattering penalty lap. Have you ever heard a better announcer?
By the way, I am shocked at the times that these competitors are putting up. They're drinking 4 beers, and they're still running under 6-minute miles.
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking at mugs. We're looking at a 45-minute mile, I assume, right, or something to start with?
Are you sure you guys want me for this? Because
Well, a Canadian won. If we could continue with the report, a Canadian won.
Yeah.
I was in that puke trouble zone, I guess. So not my day.
Kent trained the 2 nights before the race by drinking a total of a dozen beers or so.
He drank a dozen beers or so.
Sure. I can.
Muggs has been training for this his whole life.
Yeah.
He's not exactly sure what the number was. His winning time in difficult conditions was 5:07.7, 12 seconds off his world record. But he's still the world record holder.
So this Canadian set the world record, and then he won this race over the weekend with 5:09, which is not the world record. But now he's both. He's won the world championship, and he's got the world record.
All right, so and he's the man to beat.
That's where you come in, Muggs.
Wow, you know what that means?
5:09.
That's like a little over a minute for each mile. right?
Well, there's only a 1 mile in the whole race.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. For each lap.
See, this is what happens. Ralph asks a question about states. I enter Las Vegas. Then we bring in mugs to go further that way to make people forget about my Vegas comment.
All right. So maybe he's better as an athlete than as a mathlete. Maybe that's what's happening. All right. So here's the problem, Muggs.
That's minute a mile.
You're not going to believe this, Muggs, but we have been in a lot of trouble with management lately.
What?
It's hard to believe.
There have been meetings, and there have been memos, and there have been phone calls, and it hasn't been going well for your boys, Kevin and Bean. But we did go to them and ask for permission. Can we do a beer mile? Because sometimes they get a little nervous about things that involve drinking. You know, they're worried somebody's going to get hurt, and we said it's only beer mug, and they said okay. But the problem is we have to get permission to at the place that we do it. Like, we can't just jump in the van and take you down to the nearest high school and run around the
track. Which is what we would have done a week ago.
Exactly.
Before we had these meetings.
That would have made a lot of sense to us a week ago. But now they're telling us that we need permission from the track where we shoot the beer mile, because we want to film this, of course. In other words, we need somebody to agree to let us use the place and also allow you to drink four beers there. We're not talking about throwing a party or anything like that, just having you and whoever you're racing against drink the beers and run the mile.
So to us, we said, well, that's ridiculous, because we're going to have to go to some place and try and talk them into it. Who would do that? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So we thought, if you're a listener of the Kevin and Bean Show, maybe you could offer this up. It's a location to run a quarter of a mile and drink a beer, and you're okay with getting film and beer.
Right.
Now, the other two things is the lawyers want to know if Beer Mug's 21. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he's healthy or unhealthy? How do we answer that one?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, is the answer.
He is healthy or unhealthy.
Healthy at one time.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah,
but,
sure.
But as you're training for the beer mile, you'll just get healthier and healthier.
Sure.
Though. So here's where we come to you, the Kevin Bean audience, for a little bit of help. If you have access to or can speak for a track where we can run the beer mile, and it's okay with you that we're there and we film it and Beer Mug drinks some beer. That's where we need your help.
Because America.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because America. Exactly. USA.
USA! 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 USA!
And beer. Do we have a beer chant?
Oh, we gotta get that.
K-Rock presents Incubus and Deftones together. Friday at the Forum, Saturday at Irvine Meadows. We're giving away tickets through K-Rock's Instagram. How about that? Just follow us on Instagram at K-Rock. That's it for all the details. Tickets are still available for both dates. All right, we're going to talk Shark Week. No, Shweekend.
Yeah.
Coming up just after 7 o'clock here this morning on the Kevin and Bean Show. Very excited about that. But first, the moment we've all been waiting for, Ali's Periscope.
Ali's the queen of...
So last night, Allie, you decided to put your first ever Periscope up.
Uh-huh.
You've been waiting for the right moment. By the way, I should back up one step and say, for folks who don't know, Periscope basically is just you turn your phone into a live broadcast. Whatever your phone sees is what the audience sees. People can just click in and watch whatever you're broadcasting. And it's pretty amazing technology, and it's never been used better than it was last night.
That's correct. First of all, you said it's like an 8 minute long video, so we did have to edit it down.
Sure.
But you said on the video that you were made aware of this tree because Bean was watching QVC.
Yeah, Bean, why don't you talk about that tweet that you sent
out? Who watches QVC?
Bean and I.
Lots of people who love Christmas stuff, because in the summertime, a lot of times they'll devote blocks of programming to Christmas stuff, to trees and decorations and, you know, things like that. So I'm watching it a couple of Saturdays ago, and I am very excited. I tweet about that's on. And I guess, Allie, you're on vacation at that time, and you see that it's on, and you go, oh, my God, I love that, too. So you put on the QVC, and that's where you fall in love with a tree.
Because I usually watch Christmas in July on QVC. That's all the great deals. That's what you want to be watching. So rarely do I pick it up again in August. However, I've been looking for an all-season tree. I love my Christmas tree. It's great. Can't wait to put it up.
Right.
But an all-season tree that you can keep up all year round and celebrate every single season.
Now, you're talking about this yesterday morning, and I pictured a tree.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's more like just branches.
With lights?
With lights.
Yep.
Branches with lights. But there's no actual tree.
And
there's no attempt even to make it look like a tree. It's a light stand. It's basically what it is. Am I right?
You're right.
Okay. So
I mean, it doesn't have branches, but I mean, it looks like a tree but with a bunch of lights on it. Looks like a tree with no leaves. Leaves.
There's no.
It looks
like there's no leaves.
Okay. So Allie wants to show her tree off. And for those of you that haven't seen Periscope, while she's broadcasting, while she's talking about her tree, you can see on the screen people's comments. And so a lot of this conversation is Allie laughing at or referring to or talking back to people who are leaving comments on the screen.
Because they were amazing. Some of the funniest comments ever.
So here is Allie's Periscope.
I believe it's on. Can you hear me? Oh, my God. It looks like, hi, Shebeen. Yeah, okay. So you're looking at this tree and you're thinking, this is a pathetic-looking Charlie Brown tree, and I hear you. Your tree burned down.
So she's now responding to comments that people put on the screen saying, that doesn't look like a tree.
It looks like your tree burnt down, which was funny because it...
You guys are funny. But you're looking at, yes, my burnt down tree, but here is where the magic happens. You guys, are you ready?
And I turned down the lights.
What?
Yeah.
What just happened, you guys? Look at that. Here are the different colors. You ready?
So when you screamed what?
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of your beans. Oh, no, this is a colossal disaster. You're so excited
Listen,
about this tree.
I turned off the lights in my home.
Right.
To reveal when I turned on the tree. And it's like angel sang.
Yeah.
When that tree went on.
I watched it. I didn't hear a lot of angels.
Oh.
That might have just been in your head, Allie.
Okay.
But you were just fall in love with your tree all over again once you saw it in the dark. That's all.
Yeah. Purple. How do I make it clearer?
All right. Now, this is the beginning of the end.
Yes. This is where it started to go off the rails because one of the... Look, here, I have to give Allie a lot of credit for being brave and bold and putting her Periscope. No, I do. Because
she's dumb.
Because my first Periscope was a disaster, too, because I didn't know how it worked. Okay, it was the first time I'd ever tried it. You don't know it until you use it. And you remember mine. You couldn't hear anything because I was outside. It was windy. Okay,
so you can hear the wind quite clear.
You can hear the wind. So Allie is now discovering, hey, I can't focus a phone. It's not a camera. Why is this tree all blurry? And she's just wanting to make the picture better, but realizes she has no control over that, and she could not get her head around that for about 5 minutes of the Periscope.
Why is it like that? Someone help.
Someone help. Okay, so now she's asking for the people that are leaving comments to tell her how can you focus.
All right, purple. Maybe you have gay friends that want to come over. Hey, sit down with my purple tree. Have fun. Don't you feel included? My Gaber just said he does. Mm-hmm. Then you move on. A yellow tree. Why won't this...
Okay. So she's trying desperately to get through the fact that this crappy tree has lights that change color, which I feel like most of us got over when we were five.
Yeah, but so many different colors and ways to celebrate each season. The red, white, and blue, patriotic.
Okay. Still troubled by the fact that she can't get it to focus, though.
Can I focus it? How does it focus? God, I'm so bean right now. Why isn't it... I feel like... It's a colossal disaster. They're quoting Bean. This is going so wrong. How do I make it... Jeez, this is just weird. Hold on. Maybe if I turn the light on a little, it'll...
Now, I think that's probably a good instinct because a lot of times if there's not enough light, you can't focus the lens.
Yeah.
But did that help? No, it did not.
Yeah, that helped, Allie. This is going well. Tap the screen. But if you tap the screen, hold on. No, it's still not working. It's like pulsating. Why is the camera pulsating?
Good question.
Someone help me. Let's just go through.
Oh, by the way, that cut out, there was an edit right there. Clearly, that cut out like, I don't know, 25 minutes of her trying to get it.
Allie's, she's losing it at this point.
Yeah.
How these colors can morph into other colors. You guys ready?
Back to the colors of light bulbs, which are changing magically.
They're morphing.
How do they do
But honestly, to see them morph into all the different colors, like, that's great technology.
What? Twinkle. Tap the up left.
All right, now she's back to getting focused.
I don't know. I'm tapping the up left. Is that working?
No.
All right, now it's doing the morphing, but damn it, you can't tell. Why? Greg wasn't doing that.
Okay, now here's my favorite thing, is that she's really, really, really sad that those that are watching this can't enjoy the beauty of different colored lights on this tree like she is. It's like you're on E.
Yeah.
And you just want everybody else to feel what you're feeling.
That was a great question from a lot of people. How high are you right now?
Right. Yeah.
Legitimate question, too, by the way.
True.
Why is it blurry? Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Oh, yeah. Make fun of them. Make fun of people asking you why it's blurry.
Hey, why is it blurry?
Don't see. You can't. Almost as bad as staring at water. It's so true.
Now they're referencing beans again because on Beans Periscope, you looked at water.
Yeah.
And that this is worse than that?
Yeah.
Maybe if the light goes back on. No, it's still doing it.
Uh-huh.
My phone sucks. This is quite possibly the worst.
That was a good use of our time.
Oh, says Bean.
Look, I'm feeling pretty good about my periscopes right now.
How dare you? I'm now shaking. How do you abort? How do you just get rid of this? I'll just, here, it gets better when you see the Star Wars pillows again.
Listen, I was giving back to the people. They said, please show me your Star Wars pillows. That's not a euphemism.
Yeah, I'm sure they
actually
did.
Have Star Wars pillows.
Describe the pillows for people quickly.
They're from Empire Strikes Back when Princess Leia said, I love you, and Han Solo said, I know.
Two
different pillows with the profiles of iconic characters.
So now she doesn't know how to end the periscope, and she figures she'll just go back to the pillows.
Let's just look at those. What? You won any Emmys lately? Yeah, I did. Thanks.
Yeah, she was showing us her Emmys.
You guys, this is the worst thing.
She's done.
Ralph is having a stroke right now. Ralph, okay, first of all, let me just get this out of the way. Ralph is going to judge so hard on my sad tree, but you know what? He's sitting at home in his Batman room, so... Right? I'm going to regret saying that. Okay. I'm just going to go.
Okay, so now she's just trying to stop. She wants to stop periscoping.
And I don't know how.
And she can't figure out how to stop.
How do you hang up? How do you make it stop? I don't know how to stop it. Oh, you hang up. Really?
Is it still on
the PA? Cocktails were a bad idea. Oh.
That was the best.
So much drinking.
Allie's the queen of Periscope.
The Summer of the Shark continues on the Discovery Channel. We'll talk to Jeff Kerr from that channel about the programming going on this weekend. That sounds awesome, by the way. That's coming up. Also, comedian Jerrod Carmichael is going to be joining us later on today, as well as Dr. Drew Pinsky. Yesterday, we had a terrifying segment in the show where listeners were calling up and talking about their encounters with raccoons. And I think we're the people who are putting the pieces together. This raccoon invasion is on, and it's happening, and it seems like it's happening now, and it's happening fast. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, normally, if an animal is smaller than you, you can sort of scare it, and then animals that are bigger than you, you run from. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the way the world works. Yeah. Not with raccoons. They don't care. They don't care.
No, they and they're ganging up. And that was the thing that was so curious to me, is to hear stories from our listeners yesterday that talked about half a dozen raccoons, 8 raccoons, 10 raccoons. I mean, when they start ganging up like that, that's a pretty formidable foe. And the one that got on our radar that we started, really started the panic with was that story out of San Francisco. I mean, you would think a place like San Francisco, yeah, you're going to have an occasional raccoon. But we were told yesterday that there's a curfew in parts of San Francisco imposed by the raccoons. Like, don't come out onto our streets after 11 p.m. We were talking about that couple that was attacked. Patty Upsabs and her husband or partner Brian Wong were attacked coming home to their house just after 11 o'clock the other night.
So a raccoon has her dog, and she apparently picks her dog up to swing it so that the raccoon will let go.
Yeah.
Weird right there. And then other raccoons jumped on.
And so at this point, I'm in the middle of the street, and I look up to see where my husband, how come he's not helping? And I look, and he's throwing. Raccoons are just jumping on him.
What?
Terrifying. All right, so we told you all about that story yesterday, and then we invited your calls with your raccoon attacks. Well, here's an update for you. Producer Dave has tracked down the couple in San Francisco, Brian and Patty, and I believe we have them on the phone to get a firsthand account of what happened the other night in San Francisco. Hello, is this Patty?
No, it ain't Patty.
Brian?
No, it ain't Brian.
I'm sorry, our producer, we're calling from the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Our producer told us that we had you on the phone.
Yeah, you got me on the phone.
Who is this?
My name's Alan.
All right, Alan, you live there with Brian and Patty?
No, we're waiting for them to come home.
Oh, God.
Oh, you're somebody who broke into their house?
Yeah, I broke into the house.
Do you know them? Are you friends with them?
Oh, I know them. Yeah, I know them. They got away from us once, but they ain't going to get away from us again.
Now
you know what I'm saying?
Us, like perhaps you're a raccoon.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Oh, no. The raccoons are not inside the house.
Yeah, we're inside the house waiting for the upsavs to come home. Soon the upsavs are going to be the downsavs, if you know what I'm saying.
Alex, is it Alex? I'm sorry.
It's Alan.
It's Alan Bean.
Alan, sorry. Alan,
don't be ridiculous.
You son of a bitch. I got friends in Washington. We know where you are.
Okay, please don't. Please don't come after me.
Please don't. Look at you crying like a baby.
Alan, is it true that you're starting to attack in numbers and it seems organized? Because that scares us.
Yeah, it's organized. We got the gang together. You know, for a long time, we go out one by one. We take a look in your garbage, see what you got. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, there, let's lock the garbage can lids. All right,
right.
Fine. You want to play a game? I can play a game. I get six or seven of my buddies. Maybe we don't wait for you to throw your food away in the garbage. Maybe we come right after you.
See, this is what we were afraid of. It sounds like raccoons in general are getting more aggressive and more organized.
Well, you started this. Oh, let's put locking lids on our trash cans. Oh, let's not leave our dog and cat food outside. You trying to starve me? You want to take food out of my kid's mouth?
But aren't
you? I'll show you. We had a good relationship. We take a little bit, we leave you a little bit. Now all of a sudden you're getting greedy.
Alan,
Well, let me tell you something. Shut up. Let me tell you something, my friend.
Yes.
Okay? Pigs get fat. Hogs get slaughtered, okay?
Whoa. Sounds threatening, Alan.
That's right, Fred. Look at this. Switchblade. That's a nice thing I can do. I got little hands just like you, you human son of a bitch.
You have a switchblade?
Yeah, I got a switchblade. I got a gun. I got brass knuckles. I got a blackjack. I got it all. You want to get smart with me, guy? Bring it on.
Now they're using tools and weapons against us.
That's right.
I'm not feeling very good about our chances.
I'm not feeling very good about this phone call.
Alan, do we need to get a hold of the upsavs and tell them not to come home?
No, you just let them come home. I want to see the look on their pasty white faces when they walk through the door. Me and Steve and Carl and Louie and Jimbo. We're going to take them down, see? And we're going to leave a little message behind.
Oh. What's the message going to say?
I don't know. We don't spell. We're raccoons.
That's a good point.
I'm telling you.
I'm sorry. I didn't thought of that. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 6:53.
After you talked about it yesterday on the show, Ralph, I went down a Samurai Cop wormhole on YouTube yesterday, and it was one of the more entertaining afternoons I've ever spent in my life. I'm now so excited about Samurai Cop 2. I'd forgotten how great the first movie is.
It's classic. It's legendary.
It is legendary. It's just that you can't believe it's real. It's so awesome.
The magic of that film is that they worked so hard to make a good film. And missed the mark by so much.
That truly
is the magic of it.
They were full-on serious about this?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Yes. It's the earnestness of that film is what makes it magical.
Because when you did La Volantula, you all were just, it's a nod and
tongue-in-cheek.
We get it.
Absolutely tongue-in-cheek. Nothing tongue-in-cheek about Samurai Cop.
Wow, it's even better then.
They're trying to make just Die Hard. And they're just working their butts off. And it just...
It's close to Die Hard, though.
It's close to dying.
Well, you mentioned yesterday, and I think we should mention every day between now and when you debut in Samurai Cop 2. But when is it coming out again?
October the 9th.
Okay.
So far, only one theater will be showing it, but I'm sure that'll be quickly remedied.
Sure.
The Lemley NoHo 7 on October the 9th is when it premieres on the big screen. And I think shortly thereafter it'll be available on download and video on demand and DVD and what have you. But I'll keep you posted for sure.
All right.
So fantastic. Can't wait to see it. All right, time for the Showbiz Beat now, and then we'll talk about the Shweekend. That's yes. Right, the Shark Weekend this weekend on the Discovery Channel. It's going to be fun.
Speaking of Die Hard, weird goings-on this week. 2 days ago, Bruce Willis was on the set of Woody Allen's newest film, working with Jesse Eisenberg and shooting the movie. And then yesterday, suddenly, out. No more. No more working with Woody Allen.
He quit?
Well, depends on who you talk to.
He was fired.
Bruce Willis's camp says, oh, there was a scheduling conflict. Because he has to go do the Broadway show, Misery. He has to be on Broadway.
And they didn't know this till yesterday?
Apparently they were caught unaware. Oh, wait, there's... I should have looked at my calendar. So that's one story. Another story is he was fired from the set. Some say because he couldn't remember his lines. They used cue cards, which were of no help. The rest of the cast and the director, Woody Allen, were losing their minds. And so he was fired from that project, and that role will be recast.
This isn't the first time we've heard bad news from a Bruce Willis movie set, by the way.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I guess if you say so, you're up on these things.
some other
producer, directors, actors have had difficulties with Mr. Willis.
Right.
Right. Yeah. That's all I was suggesting.
Hasn't really cost him any work up until this point.
I can't imagine Woody Allen is going to put up with that for very long, right?
No, because look, Woody Allen's working on a very small budget, and he's got a very tight shooting schedule that needs to be adhered to. And I can imagine if you don't show up prepared and ready to play, the Woodman would not appreciate that.
Yeah, you can't make a movie every 3 weeks like Woody Allen unless you've got it down to a science, man.
Yes. I think Misery is the perfect name for a play with Bruce Willis in it. So it looks like Bruce is out and someone else will be in. I'll keep you posted. Hey, I got breaking news.
Oh.
We have an exclusive from Us Weekly.
And now, breaking news bulletin.
It's official. Nick Carter will be Dancing with the Stars. Hello.
Hey. Yeah, it's on, but...
Oh, okay. It's confirmed. We have it. It's our second confirmation.
Who was yesterday?
First, Bindi Irwin.
Oh, Bindi Irwin. That's right, yeah.
Now, Nick Carter.
Okay.
Who, of course, famously, remember, was one of our least popular presidents back in the 70s. So.
This Jimmy. Same guy. That's Jimmy. Sorry. Jimmy.
I think he's actually a Backstreet Boy.
Or listen, insane. I don't care about his sexuality. I don't think it matters who you love. I just matter, can he dance? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. I don't know who Nick Carter is.
I think Ali's right on that one.
He was a Backstreet Boy?
I believe so, yes. Mm.
So far, what I've heard is not going to get me to watch Dancing with the Stars. But
what if I told you they're battling for the coveted mirror ball trophy? Would that interest
that
you at
that wouldn't
all?
Help.
It's a trophy that has a mirror ball on it.
Yeah.
Right.
Where can you find that? That may be in Ali's apartment next to her.
It's my next Periscope.
Next to her burnt down tree. What the hell is going on with you people?
This kind of a sad little tree.
It is sad.
Allie's the queen of Periscope.
Right?
What just happened, you guys?
Yeah.
And the new cast of Ghostbusters may have actually crossed over and contacted someone from the other side.
What does that mean?
If you believe the National Enquirer. The National Enquirer claims that Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy... We're playing around with a Ouija board while filming on the set of Ghostbusters at the Wang Theater in Boston.
Yes?
I went to a place called the Wang Theater once, and it was not...
How was it?
Not what I expected at
all. Yeah.
Pee-wee Herman was on one side of it. And so they were playing around with the Ouija board, and they asked if anyone wanted to speak to them from the great beyond. Well, that... indicator on that Ouija board started a moving, and the letter started spelling out J-O-H-N. It's John, Kevin.
John?
B-E-L-U-S-H-I.
Belushi.
John Belushi.
Belushi.
What are American Indians coming over the hill for? I don't understand. Why are the Apaches attacking?
They talked to John Belushi.
Who ladies wasn't say they swore laughter, footsteps, and then spotted an eerie figure in the shadows. Now, here's the thing, Bean. I hear you with you casting aspersions on my story.
Well, I'm just bringing it up.
John Belushi was all set to star in Ghostbusters before his sudden untimely death in 1982.
What?
Okay.
So he's visiting us from the spirit world.
So that did happen or did not happen?
I have no idea.
Okay.
It's a National Enquirer story, and I don't know what to think, but...
I want to believe.
Let me tell you something. It didn't happen. Let me just go with that.
Come on. I want to believe.
I'm going to err
on that
side. It
doesn't seem like something Kristen Wiig would be wasting her time with.
No, it doesn't strike me that way either, but what do you know? Today's celebrity birthdays, Shirley Manson, of course, singer of Garbage, is 49 years old today. Adrian Young, the drummer for No Doubt, turns 46. Speaking of Ghostbusters, Melissa McCarthy herself is 45 years old today. Actor Chris Pine turns 35. Macaulay Culkin, also 35. Comedian John Mulaney's 33, and Dylan O'Brien, the dreamy star of Teen Wolf and The Maze Runner, he is 24 years old. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Let's face it, there's nothing better than Shark Week on the Discovery Channel. Last month, Kevin, the 28th annual Shark Week was the highest rated Shark Week ever.
I love that week.
And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, I'm so sad, and I have to wait till next July for more sharks. Wrong. This weekend is the Shweekend. Hit it, Steve.
Discovery proudly introduces Shweekend. A weekend full of sharks, shark myths, shark life.
These sharks, they just command respect in the water.
And sharks flying.
That was so insane!
Be sure to dive in one last time before the summer's over. Sharks all weekend long. Shweekend kicks off Saturday, August 29th at 9 on Discovery.
The Discovery Channel's legendary national history filmmaker Jeff Kerr has made 30 shark-related documentaries and has been part of Shark Week since 1991, and he joins us in studio right now on the Kevin Bean Show. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going?
Question one, are they sold on Shweekend? Is it too late to change the title of the weekend?
I don't know where that came from, actually.
Yeah, me either.
Jeff.
Yes.
How did you become... such a part of Shark Week. How, to fill us in. I mean, it seems like the greatest job in the world, the craziest job in the world, the most unlikely occupation in the world. How is this what you do for a living? How did you get to this point?
Boy, you know, I actually fell into it about 25 years ago, right when it was just starting. It wasn't as popular as it is today. But I should mention, I was listening to you guys on the way in here about the raccoon story.
Yeah. Yes.
And there's actually more people attacked by raccoons than sharks. I don't know if you
knew
that.
Yeah. So We need a raccoon week.
Yeah, raccoon weekend.
But they don't have the cachet that a shark does. Well, so I don't know if they could carry
one shark can take you down pretty easily.
But sharks are so cool.
I think about that a lot. I think about how you hear about all these other animals that kill so many more people than sharks, yet we are still to our core terrified of sharks. And it's the reason that it's because, A, you can't see them because they're underwater, and B, we go to the beach. We're not ever likely to be killed by a hippo like so many are in Africa because we're not around hippos, but we do go in the water, and that's why it's a very real fear for us.
Yeah, I mean, you could step off the beach right here in Southern California, any beach, and encounter a great white shark. They have them off Malibu and San Clemente. They see them all the time. You don't really hear about it because people are used to seeing them down there. So they're all over the place, but they don't attack people. That's the thing. They can coexist with us. Southern California is actually a nursery ground for great white sharks.
Sweet.
The babies grew up there.
It's good to hear.
Great news. Now, thank you for making us all feel safer today, Jeff.
Now, Bean asked you how you got in. You just said you fell into it. What does that mean?
Well, I worked in television news for a long time and kind of got bored with that. And always growing up on the Jacques Cousteau specials and, of course, the movie Jaws, I was fascinated by sharks. And I heard about this Shark Week thing on Discovery Channel that had just started. And managed to get myself a job on Shark Week, and that started in 91, and it worked out pretty well. The show's been going 28 years now, longer than I think any other cable television event in history, and I've just been sticking with it one year at a time. So,
what were you doing at the time in 1991? Were you already a filmmaker?
Yeah, I was doing I was like a news cameraman.
Okay.
Gotcha. But I got tired of shooting car wrecks and, you know, things like that.
And when you told your friends that you were going to do Shark Week, they're like, what are you talking about?
That was exactly it. You know, it was kind of a cult following back then. But it really put Discovery Channel on the map because that was the reason it was invented, was to get Discovery Channel on these cable outlets because it was just a fledgling cable operation. They said, let's do Shark Week. People will tune in and watch that, and that's kind of how it started.
Now, were you a surfer? Did you have some kind of relationship with the ocean before this, or was it just completely new to you?
It was pretty new to me, actually. Wow. The idea of jumping off a perfectly good boat into the water with sharks around was pretty scary at first. And I remember hearing the Jaws music literally in my head when I was surrounded by sharks. But after about 5 minutes, I decided, hey, they're not going to eat me. In fact, the problem I always have is getting sharks to come close to me. Interestingly enough, I mean, even with bait, sometimes they're very shy. It depends on the shark.
I don't feel like that's the message I've received from Shark Week.
I find them to be very shy. Like that.
That's not the takeaway I'm getting either. I
couldn't
think I'm with
get them close enough.
So, Jeff, Air Jaws, that's you, right?
Yes.
You've been doing that. Explain Air Jaws, because I know that's back this weekend, too.
Well, back in 2001, we did the first Air Jaws, and that was basically showcasing great white sharks that come blasting out of the water to attack seals. Mm-hmm. And back in those days, people didn't even realize that great whites could fly like that.
Did you know that?
I wasn't sure. I saw pictures, and people sent me pictures from South Africa and said, look at these flying great whites. And I thought, this has got to be Photoshopped or something. And they said, no, it's the real deal.
Literally lose all contact with water, and they're in the air. That's insane.
Yeah, 20 feet. In fact, our new show, Air Jaws, that runs Sunday night, I think it was the coolest, what we call, breach I've ever seen. We had a shark that was as big as a bus come flying out of the water with our diver right next to him. Shark probably got 10 or 15 feet of air. In super slow motion, it's a spectacular thing. It's the coolest thing in nature, I think.
Do you think at one point they'll put them in the X Games?
What?
I mean, look at all this big air they're getting. Yeah, why not? Is that the type of thing where you just have to go and just film everywhere for months to try to capture something like that on film? Or do you have a way to kind of make them do that?
Well, one thing we do is we pull a decoy behind the boat to entice the sharks to jump. Otherwise, well, we don't want to show seals getting eaten on television. It's kind of gory. So,
right.
Luckily, we know the times of year to go. There's a small window of time when you can go to South Africa and get these shots. And we know the exact places where the sharks do it because they don't jump everywhere. It's specifically this one spot in South Africa.
Why do they jump out of the water at all?
That's a good question. We've been trying to answer that for about 15 years. I think it's because there's a lot of sharks in the area and they're all competing with each other to try to get these seals that are swimming away from the island. That's part of it. And also because there's deep drop-offs around the island, they can build up speed. And it's a very effective way for them to kill a seal, which is not easy if you think about it. Seals are very smart and they're agile. Imagine being able to catch one.
Right.
So the sharks have developed this technique of flying out of the water, which surprises the seal.
I would imagine.
And,
I'm flying right now. What's happening?
I thought you were shy. What's happening?
I'm a seal. That's insane.
Wait, I thought we lived in the water. What's happening?
Why am I in the air right now?
Jeff, this is the voice of Jeff Kerr here, the Kevin DeBean Show filmmaker for the Discovery Channel. We're talking about Shweekend, which starts this Saturday night at 9 on the Discovery Channel.
Runs are they sold on that title?
20. I think they are, yeah. Kevin. I think we've established that. I just forgot. Jeff. Why won't they show a seal being eaten by a shark? I'm surprised that the audience for Shark Week wouldn't have the appetite for something like that.
You know, it's hard to watch. I've seen it a lot of times. Where, in fact, I'll tell you one sort of gruesome story.
Yes, please.
We were filming these sharks and seals battling it out, and the seal popped up right next to the boat. And they're very cute. They're like puppies. And he kind of almost looked me in the eye and gave this little gasp, and then he just rolled over, and there was no bottom half.
Oh, Jeff, why did
that's
you?
You can't show that, really. It's,
no.
Who's hungry?
That seems like a bummer.
I am glad you compared it to a puppy before you told us that, too.
And, Bean, I'm surprised you would want to see that. I think you would be the first person to say, I don't want to see that.
It's not that I would want to. I'm just surprised that the audience for Shark Week would have a problem with that because they're obviously into sharks. You know what I mean? You would think you'd want to see that. That kind of shows the power and the majesty of what a killing machine a shark is. I would think that would be great for Discovery.
But we have a lot of kids that watch, too.
Mm.
I mean, every kid I talk to. You know, I have kids and all their friends. Oh, Shark Week. There's the guy from Shark Week.
You've scarred so many children, haven't you?
All right. We got to take a quick break. Jeff is here. Again, the program starts this Saturday night at 9 on the Discovery Channel. It's 24 hours of Shweekend. Now, this is the first time
they've sold completely on Shweekend?
Yes, Kevin.
This is the first time they've had a Shweekend, right, Jeff?
This is the first
this is
one.
New yeah. this year. And why? Is it because there was so much stuff they couldn't fit it all into Shark Week last month?
I think, you know, just riding the wave of popularity, because it seems like we get better ratings every single year and a bigger audience. It becomes more of a pop culture thing. So I think they wanted to try, let's do it one more time before the end of summer.
Fantastic. All right. Many more questions for our guest, Jeff Kerr, when we return right after this on K-Rock. Very funny comedian and actor Gerard Carmichael joins us next hour here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Also, we'll catch up with Dr. Drew about his big HLN special tonight. First, though, we're talking Shweekend. You're not familiar with Shweekend because it is new on the Discovery Channel for 24 hours starting at 9 o'clock tomorrow night. Jeff Kerr is in studio with us now. He is one of the men who makes the great stuff you see every year for Shark Week.
I think it's Saturday night.
I'm sorry, it is. Of course, it's Saturday night. Yeah. Man, in my mind, it's already Friday. How sad is that?
Wow.
Wow.
Jeff, I know you must have some close encounter stories, between either you or your crew
with
or something
aliens?
Like that.
Aliens?
No, no, no. Oh. Tell me about a time you got dangerously close to a shark.
Well, I had an experience where I had a great white shark breach right over the top of me, a 2,000-pound shark. We called him Colossus, gave him a nickname. And basically, I was being towed on this little metal craft called a seal sled, towed behind the boat, through an area called the Ring of Death. And I was pulling a decoy behind
me. I'm sorry.
It.
Hold.
None of this is good.
Hold, please. What were you on?
It was called the seal sled.
Seal sled.
Tiny metal craft.
In the
Ring of Death.
Okay.
Ring of Death. All right. Shouldn't the Ring of Death have been an indication that you weren't where you maybe wanted to be?
Well, when you want to see a great white shark fly out of the water, that's the best place.
You go to the Ring of Death.
Go to the Ring of Death. Okay.
And anyway, the guys in the boat were towing me along, and after about 90 minutes, this huge shark came flying up. I had no idea where the shark was coming from or when it was going to attack, but it came flying up, flew over the top of me. I remember looking up and seeing this big white belly. A little bit like, kind of a Moby Dick moment.
Right.
And flew over the top, splashed down, got an amazing shot. And the whole time I was worried, is the shark going to land on me?
That's what I'm thinking is, if it's over my head, I'm dying. Yeah.
That was like getting hit by a car, right, if he lands on you.
Oh, yeah. That would have been it. I had a helmet on, and I had some life vests and things like that. And we had a little tiny roll bar on the seal sled.
Well, that would have helped.
Why do they hate you?
Yeah. Why are they trying to kill you, Jeff?
It's what you have to do, to keep raising the bar, though. We have to get these shots. And we knew enough about the shark behavior that we figured the shark was going to attack the decoy and not attack the seal sled that I was riding on. So it worked out, but I wouldn't recommend doing it for the general public.
Was this the same time period where you had the RoboSeal?
Yeah, RoboSeal. Yeah, that was one of the things that didn't work out too well.
RoboSeal was a mechanical seal, right, that you were using as bait.
Yeah, thanks for remembering that. Yeah.
And what was the problem with the RoboSeal?
It cost $10,000, and it only lasted about maybe 15 seconds.
15 seconds?
It did a couple. It was pneumatic, and it had air inside, and it was flapping its little robotic fins, and the shark just came up and destroyed it. And that was it. So we had one quick shot of it. But it was kind of cool.
Wow. What's the ghost cage?
The ghost cage. Well, that's a cage that becomes invisible when you drop it in water because it's made of like a Lexan plastic. And when the sharks look at it, it looks like there's a guy inside, but there's nothing around.
All they see is you.
Right.
Cool.
The ghost cage. So we had it in Guadalupe Island, Mexico, last year for one of our shows called Island of the Mega Shark. And we had seven great whites trying to get into that cage and get our diver. It was unbelievable how they just wanted to get close to this guy.
Yeah, just close. They just wanted to get close to him.
Because they're shy, remember?
Right, they're shy.
Yeah.
They wanted to snuggle.
They were very frustrated by this invisible barrier, and they couldn't get to him. But that was one of the cool inventions.
Yeah.
It is amazing how, as you said, Shark Week gets bigger and bigger every year. And I guess it's a year-round thing for people who work on that show is what can we try that we haven't tried before? Where can we go that we haven't gone? What needs to be invented to get the shots? I mean, that must be a fascinating part of your job because you're kind of doing the same thing, but it's different every year.
Yeah, it takes about a year to do one of these shows because we do have to...
A year?
A year, yeah. And we're already working on shows for 2016 and 2017. So, I mean, you have to build things from scratch.
What do you spend most of your time in that you're doing?
Well, a lot of it's, the editing and all that stuff, because we do the complete show and the music scoring and all that. But it takes, 3 or 4 or 5 weeks out in the field to get these shots that you see. And a lot of times the sharks don't cooperate. The weather doesn't cooperate. It's hard to even get out in the ocean to film these animals, let alone get them to come close enough to get good shots. I mean, it's a very tough job.
They're inconsiderate beasts.
Yes.
Now, I know that Discovery spends a portion of every Shark Week talking about the preservation, the conservation of sharks, I should say. Sharks are in bad shape around the world, right? I mean, we're losing a tremendous number of them. And I know a lot of people think that's not a big deal, but it kind of is, right?
Yeah, definitely. For the most part, sharks are in a lot of trouble. A lot of species are in trouble, depending on where you go. Up to 70, 80 million a year are being pulled out of the ocean for some ridiculous thing called shark fin soup, which...
Did you say 70 to 80 million a year?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's commercial fishing. Also, sport fishing takes its toll, sport fishing and sharks. And I think, you know, thanks in part to Shark Week, people really frown on sport fishing now for sharks because you can't just go down and catch a shark and hang it up on a dock without people getting really upset. And in the 60s and 70s, before Shark Week, you could do that. And people thought, oh, that's cool. You're making the ocean a safer place because you pulled the shark out and killed it. But nowadays... You know, you saw what happened with Cecil the Lion. It's getting that way with sharks now. But you pull a big, huge shark out, and people say, wow, that thing is probably 50 years old. It's the apex predator of the ocean. It's very important to keeping the ocean balanced and, you know, eliminating the weak and the sick, which sharks do. So, you know, why kill it? What, maybe catch it and release it. You know, you don't have to catch it and put it up on a dock and take
it. Is there a safe way to even catch it?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely safe ways to catch them because they're easy to catch. I mean, even a big great white, you could throw a big hook over the side with a piece of meat on it in a barrel and wear it out very quickly and pull it onto your boat. That's why they've been protected for so long in California because people were doing that after Jaws came out. And the white sharks almost became extinct off California. Now we have a great healthy population of great whites, so it's not all doom and gloom. There's white sharks off of our coast all the time. Right now.
Is that good?
It's good.
Okay. All right. Just checking.
Do you have a lot of young people who fall in love with Shark Week who want to follow in your footsteps?
Oh, yeah. I think so. A lot of the young biologists that I've spoken to were inspired by Shark Week in its early days. Usually people say, I saw Jaws and I was scared of sharks. And then I saw Shark Week and I became more interested. And that led me to becoming a marine biologist or a filmmaker. So I think it's really changed the perception of sharks. Shark Week definitely has.
You guys do an incredible job on the Discovery Channel. That's not news to anybody. I mean, you guys have been doing it for a long, long time. So Shweekend is this weekend, starting Saturday night at 9. So for 24 hours, these are all new shark shows, right?
Lots of new shark shows, definitely in prime time. My show, Air Jaws, Walking with Great Whites, is on Sunday night. So check that one out. And there's four new shows. The Mythbusters have a new shark show, and they're very funny.
I love that.
And so there's new shows mixed with some of the best of Shark Week.
Can't wait. Sounds great. Thank you so much. Jeff Kerr from the Discovery Channel. We appreciate you stopping by, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla both coming up on today's Kevin and Bean Show, and comedian Gerard Carmichael as well. I read, I wish I could give attribution to it, but somebody put up a tweet yesterday that said CNN is confusing Donald Trump with a plane that went missing because they are doing 24 hours a day on Donald Trump. Imagine how frustrated you would be, Kevin, if you were a senator or a governor or a former secretary of state and you were trying to get some sort of coverage for your presidential campaign. They can't stop talking about Donald Trump. And here's one anchor who's willing to admit that he's having problems.
I'm a news anchor, and I'm addicted to Donald Trump. There are so many real issues. Income inequality. Climate change. When Trump says something like, breastfeeding is disgusting, I can't help but dedicate my entire cable news show to
it. Donald has ruined our family.
Aw.
When our son came out of his coma, my husband couldn't make it because he said he found the scoop of a lifetime. Turns out the scoop? Trump claimed Heidi Klum's not as hot as she used to be.
So that's kind of what's going on cable news right now, is if Trump says it, it gets a full hour. And he was back in the news yesterday. He was doing a press conference at the Grand River Center in Dubuque, Iowa on Monday. And a journalist who was there, a very prominent Spanish-language journalist named Jorge Ramos from Univision, wanted to stand up and ask a question about Mr. Trump's immigration policy. Well, it didn't go so well.
Okay, who's next? Yeah, please. Excuse me, sit down. You weren't called. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down. Go ahead. No, you don't. You haven't been called. Go back to Univision. Go ahead.
You cannot deport 11 million.
Go ahead.
You cannot deport 11 million people. You cannot deport 1,900 people.
Go ahead.
You cannot deny citizenship.
Sit down, please. You weren't called. Go.
And that's where he motions to his security to go and escort Mr. Ramos out of the press conference.
Yes, go ahead.
Later in the press conference, Mr. Trump was asked if he thought he handled the exchange well, and he said, well, the guy was obviously a very emotional person. He just stands up and he starts screaming, so maybe he's at fault. So basically that's wow. Where Donald Trump's coming out. Because, look, America goes off the rails if you start asking politicians questions. Come on. Be ridiculous. Donald Trump, back on the phone, back on the Kevin and Bean Show, our next president, ladies and gentlemen. How are you, Mr. Trump?
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. How are you? You're welcome.
You can't seem to stay out of controversy. What's up?
It's not me. I'm not looking for controversy. I'm trying to make America great again.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mexicans come along and ruin it.
But isn't it a legitimate question to say, hey, you've talked about how you're going to make all these changes to the immigration system, like building this giant wall and deporting millions of Americans? How are you going to pay for it? Isn't that a legitimate question that maybe voters want the answer to?
This reporter was out of order. He didn't wait to be called on to ask his question. He stands up, starts ranting and raving like a madman, like a lunatic.
Well, no, we heard it. He was just calmly asking you a question.
Are you going to believe your ears or me?
I'm going to go ears.
Ranting and raving like a lunatic. He had to be escorted from the press conference.
He didn't have to be escorted. You ordered your people to escort him from the press conference.
Well, he should go back to where he came from, Univision.
Right. Now, is part of the underlying story here that you're suing Univision for $500 million because they canceled airing your Miss Universe pageant?
That has nothing to do with the fact that Univision is an evil, evil organization filled with Satanists.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. And your proof of that is what?
Really, you're missing the point, I think, here.
What's the point, Donald
Satan.
Trump? Right, Satan is the point. Okay.
But listen, when this reporter,
Jorge.
Listen, I don't speak Mexican, okay?
Right, you've also said that this week. That's right.
I speak English, and in English, it's Jorge Ramos.
Okay, but Mr. Ramos was asking you a question in English. He was speaking English and just wanting you to answer it.
But because he's from Mexico, I'm guessing he's a rapist or a drug dealer.
Well, that's insane.
And I don't answer questions from rapists or drug dealers. That's how I feel. That's why America used to be great, and now it's not.
He's neither of those things. He is a prominent, well-respected journalist for a legitimate news organization.
That's your opinion. But I say probably druggist or rapist. Let's face it. We're losing. We're losing to Mexico.
Right.
We're losing to China.
Right. We've heard you say that.
He might be Chinese for all I know.
I don't think he's Chinese.
Pretty sure he's not.
Again, that's your opinion.
Okay. Hey, how are you going to bring the jobs back to America, Mr. Trump?
Well, first thing I'm going to do is bring jobs back to America.
I know you've been saying that a lot, but I'm just curious how.
By doing it.
Right, but what steps will you be taking to accomplish that goal?
Exactly.
All right, Sit down.
I didn't point to you. Sit down.
We're on the phone. You don't point. What?
Sit down.
You don't point to people on the
sit
phone.
Down.
What?
Go back to where you came from. Your mother's wherever.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. It is 9 minutes till 8.
And time once again for the Showbiz Beat here on a Wednesday morning. Here's Ralph Garman.
Anything you'd like to say to Kevin and particularly Allie Bean?
Oh. I'm not sure I know what you're talking about, Ralph Garman.
Oh, well, let's see if this rings a bell.
Huh.
Musician Ed Sheeran was in the news recently
when
he posted a photograph of his newly shaved chest and a tattoo he was getting of a lion's head. He claimed that the lion on his chest was only half finished. It was designed to mark his 3 sold-out gigs at London's Wembley Stadium in July. Well, today, Sheeran has come clean with yet another picture of what seems to be a completely bare, tattooless shaven chest with no sign of that tattoo. And he wrote in the image, was only joking about the lion.
Yeah. Really?
Apparently that was just painted on by a friend.
Really?
I remember when we were talking about this, I remember Allie saying that looks like it was drawn on by a marker.
It looked airbrushed or markers.
And then Bean...
Look,
was a dick.
I wasn't a dick.
Ouch.
I think you were.
All I was saying was, why, and Kevin, you're more guilty of this than anybody, why is everything suspect? Why can you never take anything at face value? Like, why is everything a conspiracy and everything is a lie? So I was suggesting maybe he just got a tattoo of a lion. It's not everything's a big cover-up.
I have a question for you, though. Yeah. And yes. Isn't now the wrong time to bring up?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't your position less strong, I think, given this new information?
It was
even
fake.
Though you sound like you're coming at it with a very strong attack.
So
like,
for everybody that tweeted me, oh, not everyone's out to get you, Allie, which, A, wasn't the point.
Why do they talk like that?
Was because that's how they
that's
tweet.
That's how they
sound. What?
Mouthful of Bean? Oatmeal.
Yeah, a bunch of marbles. Bean, go ahead. I'll wait for the real, just heartfelt.
This is why I say you don't have to question everything. Sometimes things are just on the level and legitimate, and it's okay to just accept them. That's my point.
This,
I think that's the takeaway of this story.
That's not the takeaway.
I think you may be missing the
point. The takeaway is you were a jerk, especially
Allie,
and me as well, as we were doubting that.
Yeah.
I've never been a jerk to Owly or whatever you called her.
You call her Owly.
Owly, she's my favorite. She sits in that tree and licks those lollipops trying to get to the center of them.
We'll wait.
Yep, we got it.
I think you and Owly are going to be waiting for a while.
It appears like maybe just this once you were right to be skeptical. Appears like Ed Sheeran was just having a laugh.
Doesn't sound like a very good apology.
Sucked.
I'm sorry, Owly.
Oh, sorry, Owly.
you were right. I was wrong. Say it.
You were right, and I was super wrong again. Like
Thank
I do.
You, Thank you. Let's get apology that accepted.
Thank you. How about you, Kevin? Do you accept my apology?
Nope.
Okay.
Do we have that clear in the tape?
We do.
That line of beans?
Okay, oh, yeah.
Good. That'll come in handy.
Yep.
Over and over and over again.
Yep.
Speaking of bean, here's a little trivia question. See if you can answer it. What's Bean's favorite Alfred Hitchcock movie of all time?
The Birds?
Nope.
I don't know.
Bean?
I don't know why you're asking me this question, but it's probably Rear Window.
Rear Window.
How did you know that?
What do I win?
Is it because of my love for Grace Kelly?
Yeah, I assumed that's why it was.
Okay. Well, why is that in the news?
Because they're doing a stage version of Rear Window.
Why so soon?
The film from 1953 or whenever it was made is now being adapted to the stage, and playing the Jimmy Stewart role will be none other than Kevin Bacon.
All right.
Kevin Bacon. The reason I bring it up is because what a sweet-ass gig that is. You sit in a wheelchair for the entire show.
B would love that so much.
Oh, you sit on a stage and you just sit there. Sweet ass gig. Sweet ass gig. No word on who'll be playing the Grace Kelly role yet, but so Rear Window on stage.
All right.
D's Nuts.
Kevin Bacon. D's Nuts may be co-starring with Mr. Bacon. Speaking of Broadway, of course, I told you earlier in the week that Bruce Willis was going to be starring in a play adapted from Stephen King's book Misery on Broadway. It turns out he forgot. He forgot that he had that to go do because he was on the set of a new Woody Allen film this week. He had been cast in the Woody Allen film, and he was working, in quotes, with Jesse Eisenberg and other actors. And then yesterday, gone from the set. He is being replaced on that shoot. And his rep says it's because of a schedule conflict because Bruce has to go do Broadway.
He didn't know that before yesterday?
Apparently not. However, there is another point of view.
Bean, is it all right if we doubt that?
If we doubt that,
is that
statement
okay
with
yes.
you?
Okay.
I think that's reasonable in this case, yes.
There is another
side
to the story
okay,
where some folks are saying he was a problem on the set, didn't remember his lines, even cue cards were of no help, and he was did not show up prepared, was not a professional on the set, and so he was removed from the production, fired, if you will.
Huh.
That's another point. No real confirmation from Woody Allen's camp one way or the other. But what are you going to do? Sometimes you got to go do a Broadway play and you forget. And you're on the set and you're in the middle of a scene with Jesse Eisenberg. Oh, crap! What time is it? I'm supposed to be on Broadway. And you just run. You just run. You hop in the back of your limo and you take off.
Maybe it was a pop-up Broadway play and he didn't know about it until
maybe.
That yeah.
It would have been so much better if you knew you were going to leave for Broadway. Woody was very upset. Speaking of people who have a history, who have a reputation perhaps as being prickly
mm-hmm.
at times.
We're talking about me now?
No.
Oh.
Alec Baldwin and his wife, Hilaria, apparently going through a bit of a rough patch.
Uh-oh.
Friends of the couple.
He seems like he's so easy to live with.
Friends with the couple say he has been tired and irritable lately.
What?
Lately? And that his young bride cannot stand his mood swings. Word is that she's had enough. So much so that the two, according to the National Enquirer at least, went to see a therapist. And that therapist was Dr. Ruth Westheimer.
What?
Remember Dr. Ruth?
She's still alive?
Yes.
Wow. Isn't she a sex therapist?
What? She is a sex therapist.
Isn't she 90?
She is 87 years old.
When you have this sex with the other people, you have to go do it in very, very special ways.
She had that little tiny little munchkin voice, remember? Uh-huh. She was hot for
did she have a show, or was she just a guest on everybody else's
TV show? Yeah. She had her
radio
books,
show?
Radios, guest on every talk show.
Is she still doing that show?
No, she doesn't have a show anymore, but I think she's still
she's helping out Alec Baldwin. Yeah.
I wonder if they have sexual problems then, instead of just...
It's quite a guess.
She is a sex therapist, Allie. I think you could make that leap. I'm just saying.
Well, it's not just so much that they're having marital problems, like they're not getting along. They're not maybe boning. I'm just
anyway.
Would
you step out the hall and periscope?
Okay.
I wish them the best. But Alec seems like he would be a difficult
mate.
He does.
Yes.
I'd give it a go.
You call him to ask for him to pick up a loaf of bread on the way home, and he's a rude little pig is all you get on the other end of the phone. You don't need
right.
You're a rude, thoughtless little pig. I'm just asking to pick up some milk, Al. You guys are scrambling over there for something, but it's all right. We're done now. We're moving on. It's okay.
We'll get it.
No, I can't buy you any more time.
Get it, man.
I can't buy you any more time.
Hold, please.
We're up against the clock here anyway.
You are a rude, thoughtless little pig.
That's going to sound so much better in post when we edit out all that dead air. Today's celebrity birthdays, August 26th. These celebrities were born. Shirley Manson, lead singer of Garbage. Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Right.
Damn.
Yeah. Her.
49 years old. Adrian Young.
Damn.
Damn. Love him. From No Doubt, he's 46. Melissa McCarthy, soon to be seen as one of the new Ghostbusters, 45 years old today. Chris Pine, 35 years old. Macaulay Culkin celebrates his 35th birthday. Remember when he was home alone? What's he doing now?
I don't know.
Just running around, being all Culky.
Yep. It's just happening.
Comedian John Mulaney's 33 years old today. And Dylan O'Brien from Teen Wolf and The Maze Runner. Boy, the ladies love this Dylan O'Brien kid. Boy,
yep.
They like him. He's 24. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Comedian, actor Jerrod Carmichael joins us in studio in a few minutes here on K-Rock and Adam Carolla just after 9. About once a week on the program, we catch up with our good friend Dr. Drew Pinsky over there on HLN, usually to talk about some nonsense that we want to talk about. But today, we're going to talk about some nonsense that Dr. Drew's got going on with a big two-part special airing tonight and tomorrow night on HLN called Transgender in America, a deep dive into a topic that we've been hearing a lot about this summer. Hey, Dr. Drew, welcome back to the show, my friend.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for promoting that. It's an important show.
It sounds like an important show, and of course, transgenderism has never been more talked about in America at any time in our history as it has been this summer, thanks to Caitlyn Jenner. Why did you decide you wanted to devote 2 hours of network time to the topic?
Well, that is precisely the reason. We were sort of piecemealing it all the time, and sort of at least a couple times a week for one segment or two, we'd be sort of scratching our head about Caitlyn, and is it good, is it bad? We've had a lot of it. It's interesting to me, a lot of the transgender folk that you see on I Am Kate have actually been contributors on my program. And we're always trying to understand the topic and understand, is this a good thing that we're talking about? And clearly it's pushed it to the top of mind. And as a result, we thought, you know, we need to, like, do this comprehensively. I'm really pretty clueless. You know, I really, myself, my staff, we really don't fully understand it. So let's just dive into it for a couple
Wait,
days.
Wait, you're clueless?
I'm clueless.
What am I going to do?
Well, it's clueless and it's clueless squared.
Wow.
And, And we filled our entire studio audience just with transgender individuals. So if you look across the all the seats are filled just with transgender folks, and they get up. You know, our show is very audience interactive, and they get up and they interact with my panelists. Catherine was up there, and we have a couple of the panelists. And, you know, the first night is really dedicated to the general issues, and the second night is transgender women of color and the special, really, threats they're under. And the issues of dealing with the workplace and how do they get the money to make their transition and what happens if they don't. And it's really, like, you know, like any human phenomenon, when it's something that it's not ordinary, it's not the usual situation, you really learn about humanness generally. It really was very poignant to do these stories, and we learned a lot. And I'll tell you what else happened. But, you know, I don't know if you're like me, but my daughter who just graduated college is always schooling me on preferred gender pronouns. You heard
okay.
this?
Yeah.
Preferred PG, R, whatever. Preferred gender pronouns. And, you know, and one of the first topics that came up that you'll see tonight is, how do we talk about this without stepping on landmines? And, you know, one of my panelists said, you know, I want to talk about it, but I feel ignorant. And she's just stepped in some crap right there. Boom.
I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up, Dr. Drew, because We had a situation a couple of years ago with Lara Jane Grace, who I know you know from the band Against Me, and we had her in to do an interview to promote their new album and tour. And we kind of stepped in it a little bit through no malice at all, just from being unfamiliar with the topic, not yep. being as comfortable with it as probably yep. we would be now. And we did slip up on a couple of pronouns, and we got blasted for yep. that. And there were yes. articles written about us, and we felt really, really bad about it because we weren't trying to insult her at all.
I know.
It's just, like you said, it's a landmine that people just walk into when they're talking about something that they're not that familiar with.
That's right. And you'll see us do it in real time, and we are corrected, and our chains are pulled back in the right direction. And actually, I was grateful it happened because this is precisely what we wanted to avoid, but here it is. So let's really talk about how we can avoid it. And what I have found, there's sort of a, I don't know if this is true, and I don't know if I'm speaking on behalf of the community, but if you really become a trans ally, you want to be a trans ally, which is sort of a term I think people understand now, just throw yourself on it, on the pyre, and say, what can I do to be of help? That's all. I just want to be of help. And unlike many communities that are exclusive, I have found the transgender community to be inclusive and to appreciate that, and they will help you. They will. There may be a little bit of pushback at first, but ultimately they want allies, and that to me is a sign of a healthy organization.
I feel like America has come such a long way in the last few years towards universal gay acceptance across most yeah. of this country. Yeah. Are we at some point going to get there, and we're just kind of in the early stages of kind of getting the message out about transgender issues?
I think that's what this is. And if you really, you know, sort of the fundamental issues are understanding the difference between sexual orientation, who I love, who I'm sexually attracted to, and gender identification, who am I, what am I? They are separate phenomena, and they develop separately. They're neurobiologically different. They're psychologically different. And they're interesting. It's really interesting and poignant, and you can really see, you know, what, you know, those of us that are physicians trying to struggle with this, is it a pathology, is it not? Well, what's our job except to help people flourish? And you see that when people get the right treatment, you'll see people in my audience tonight who are just flourishing. I mean, they're just doing great, and it sort of begs the issue at that point. It's like, okay, come on, this really clearly for the right population, for the right situation, you do these treatments and people really have great results. And we have, by the way, have one of the famous physicians on the panel too, who does a lot of these reassignment surgeries.
I bet there are going to be some people watching across the country. We're talking to Dr. Drew about the Transgender in America special, two-night event starting tonight on HLN at 6, who will be surprised that you're able to get so many together to fill a studio audience, not realizing how many transgenders there are in America.
There's that, and I think you'll look across the studio audience and not realize that's a transgender, because it's so, you know, so many of the transgender community are just so completely, not just comfortable, but it's you know, phenomenal in terms of their transition and the way they live and their sense of themselves. And we all have a lot to learn from it. And, you know, for people that, you know, are threatened by it, that somehow challenges their worldview, that's not what these people are up to. They just want a job. They want acceptance. They don't want Cirrus, and let's all get on with things.
Do you feel like having Michael Catherwood there was a good idea?
Never. Never a good idea. And of course, not outside of my hand. So, but, you know, let's think, did anything weird happen with him? I'm trying to think. Any outbursts from him? No, he actually was pretty, and he, you know, he'll tell you the same thing. He and I learned, you know, we really felt like we learned something. We had thought we were pretty tuned into this issue. And if we can learn, by the way, a lot, anybody watching this show will really, I think, come away with some a deeper and a more comfortable understanding of this thing.
Would it be offensive to anyone if I were to point out what a pretty woman Michael Catherwood would make?
Yeah. Just trying to think where we're going with this.
Yeah. That's all.
Just a question.
I'm just saying.
Well, I mean, he's a pretty man. So
okay. All right.
Therefore, okay. All right.
Transgender in America is the special, a two-night event on HLN with our good friend Dr. Jupinski. That starts tonight at 6. Doc, thanks for the time. Thanks for the good work.
Thank you, guys.
It's so disorienting to have a nice, friendly, pleasant, happy person in the room. Like, I don't even know how to handle Gerard Carmichael. This is weird.
Andy smells great.
Thank you very much, Alex.
We're just so used to everybody just being cranky and mean here on our show, Gerard. This is refreshing.
What are you talking about? You guys are so delightful. Who would be angry here?
Right, that's what we meant.
Give it time.
Yeah.
That's what we meant. All right. So Gerard walks in. He, of course, very famous comedian. You know him, you love him, you can't live without him. And now he's back on your TV on NBC
according
tonight.
According to my publicist.
Yeah. Right? On NBC tonight with the Carmichael Show, which we will talk about. Looks very, very funny. But I want to give you the mic first because you're fascinated with the fact that Chip is working here.
Yeah. I mean, listen. So I sit down. And the most interesting fact, I meet a Chip. You never meet a Chip, by the way. And Chip,
you really don't.
Chip is delightful. And then I find out that Chip won Chip of the Year at Disney. Was it Land or World?
At
the Land. Classic. Two times. 2 years in a row.
She repeated.
Two years in a row.
And we all know how tough that is to do.
And it's like, listen, screw whatever my accomplishments are. Chip, 2 years in a row is excellence. And that's fantastic. And Chip and Dale, one of the greater theme songs of all time.
Huh?
Yeah, Rescue Rangers.
Okay.
Very important.
Did you ever play Dale?
Yeah.
Oh, you did. Okay.
You're
versatile.
But never Dale of these.
You are the Mary Kay Ashley Olsen of Chip and Dale.
I'm going to add that on my business card.
It must be awesome, though, to have an accomplishment like that, that you know no matter who you're with at the party, you win, sort of. You know, I mean, there may be somebody there who's won an Oscar. Okay,
yeah,
maybe.
But sure.
Most cases, you're Chip of the Year. That's pretty tough for somebody else to beat.
I'm pretty much the Patriots. But good.
You're pretty much, you are the Tom Brady of Disneyland.
So you cheated?
All right, let's move on. This is upsetting, and I don't want to upset our guests.
All right, Gerard, let's talk about your show because it's a big deal to get a network sitcom. Now you're on for an hour tonight, right? Two episodes, 9 and 9:30 on NBC.
That's a lot of time on television.
It's a lot of time on TV. How are you feeling about it?
I'm feeling excited. You know, it's two shows. The 9 o'clock, I think, is really fun. It's, you know, it's the pilot, you know, but it's a pilot, and I'm really excited for people to watch, like, the 9:30 show. I think it was when we really start digging into what the show's about, and what our attempt is. And, you know, I think we touch on a lot of social issues. It's a family show, and it's basically rooted around family discussions, family sitting around talking about the things that I think real American families talk about.
Is it in the pilot where you're trying to not tell your parents that you're moving
in? Yeah, that's the pilot. Okay. Yeah, that's the pilot, and it's me trying to avoid telling my parents that my girlfriend moved in. And I think it's really fun. I think it shows hints of what we're trying to do, and I think by the second episode we find a rhythm, and I'm really excited about that one. I always put that one. It's like not the politically correct thing to do, just to come in. It's just like, yeah.
You're like, skip the first one.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, watch it. I think it's fun. Whatever. The second one, if you judge the show, judge off of that.
I feel like a lot of shows can't do that. I feel like a lot of shows come out of the gate pretty good, but then once everything's established, they just fall off.
Yeah, I think we warmed into it. I think, a little bit more freedom, and I think I'm most comfortable when actually talking about something. I don't like being held to like these silly stories. And like by the second episode, it's a black kid gets shot in my hometown of protest.
Sound funny. Wow.
Yeah. Right.
Wow.
All those. You know. And more zany things.
So in other words, you didn't want to be part of a sitcom where the joke is that you get locked out of the house and now you have to figure out a way to break it. I mean, that's the type of thing you try to stay away from. You're talking about issues.
Yeah, it's boring. It's boring unless it has genuine tension in it, to me. You know,
and that's what your stand-up's always about. I mean, look, your stand-up, if they give you comedians a list of things not to talk about because you're worried about turning the audience off, you talk about every single one of them. I mean, your show is race and it's homelessness and it's domestic abuse and it's rape. It's everything.
Well, mindless content isn't that fun. You know,
that's
I think
what, that's how we make a living, Gerard. Come on.
That's
no,
true. We
no.
My, that's my, most of us, is my, it's mindless. It is.
What?
I'm sorry.
Take another run.
That, hey, look, if you think that moment didn't have genuine tension, then you guys are crazy. You didn't see what I saw.
Is that desperation on Kevin's face? Yeah, am I going to get to the end of this sentence?
How dare you, sir.
Chip of the year, back me up. So when you were sitting down and you got the opportunity to do a sitcom, you said, I want to do it, but it has to be from my point of view, and it can't be like every other family sitcom that's been on the air for the last 50 years.
Yeah, and look, we stay true to the format. I always say I don't think we're reinventing the wheel on this one. I think it's
that's
a good year
title. That's episode four.
Episode four. It's about wheels.
I can't wait.
I get a job at a tire factory. It's a great. It's true to the format. I really believe. I'm very heavily inspired by Norman Lear and shows Murphy Brown and all these shows that really talked on political.
That is the first Murphy Brown reference in.
Yeah, it was a great pull.
20 years.
Yeah.
It's a great listen. It's a great show. It made Dan Quayle acknowledge the show in an election. You know, like they're talking about single moms, and it was that socially relevant. And so I know what this format has the potential to be. And
are you allowed to in 2015 mention Bill Cosby, even if he was a big influence on you as a comedian or as a television actor?
Yeah, I think. Look, we're talking to adults who, and it goes without saying, we realize that what he's accused of is horrible and disgusting and vile and other words that describe how horrific it is. And then, we're all adults in the sense that, we're able to know when I mention, hey, the Cosby Show is a great show. Mm-hmm. Like, we all, up until last year, agreed with that sentiment. Yeah.
It doesn't diminish.
Exactly.
Except for the secret sauce episode. That one now is a little bit
different. That one becomes a little different. Man. But no, but it's, but you know, so, you know, I'm able to say that, with confidence. It's like, look, that the show was great. And, stand up, I think, is excellent. And, it's just an unfortunate situation for everybody. So I don't shy, because it wouldn't be honest. Like, I don't shy away from mentioning it because it is this influence. But, you also. You have to, it goes without saying normally, but I still say it. It's just like, of course. Don't agree with those accusations.
Gerard Carmichael is here. The show is called The Carmichael Show. How'd you pull that off, by the way?
Oh, man, a lot of lawyers.
Because I bet naming the show is something that there's a lot of meetings about. And I'm sure there were people who argued, not everybody knows who you are, Gerard. I don't know that putting your name in it is going to help. Maybe we come up with some sort of wacky sitcom name. I bet that happened, right?
Yeah. For me, it's not even for vanity reasons. I just wanted to be held accountable for the content, and nothing like putting your name on it makes it yours, and that rule applies to food in the break room and your own television show.
All right, the show's out at 9 and 9:30 tonight on NBC. More with our guests right after this on K-Rock. Comedian, actor Gerard Carmichael in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Maybe you know him from his one-hour special on HBO called Love at the Store. Very funny. By the way, directed by Spike Lee.
What's up with that guy?
Did you know Spike Lee?
No, I called him. I literally was I want Spike Lee to direct. And, and Hollywood works in such a small town. You're just like, you reach out and through like a couple great people. Reached out and was like, hey, we want you to direct the special. He's familiar
with the Kings of Comedy, right?
He did the Kings of Comedy. He did also a John Leguizamo special and a Cat Williams special.
Okay, right, so you knew he was great at it.
And he was familiar with your stand-up?
He was familiar with the stand-up. He'd seen me before, I believe, in New York. And, we met, we talked. It was a fun experience. Yeah, he's great.
One of the things I love about Gerard's stand-up is you're not afraid of downtime. You're not afraid of saying it and letting it sit there and letting the audience think about it, and you don't panic, and you're no rush. And I think that had to have taken you a lot of practice to get to the point where you were comfortable enough with your material to be able to not panic about how fast the next joke was going to come.
Well, you just trust it. I just trust that if you're saying something and it means something, then it should breathe. You should be able to put it out there. Like in a conversation, I'm not going to rush to the next topic, and I'm not going to. So I want my stand up to reflect that and to be true to my way of speaking and my thought process.
And because some of the topics you talk about are, you know, tinderbox issues, the audience sometimes doesn't know whether it's okay to laugh.
Yeah.
Which I also enjoy. I love that that's a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, it gives people pause because it, I mean, you know, you say these things and these are a lot of times just thoughts that you, that shouldn't leave the shower.
Right.
You know, but then you, and then you say them into a microphone and people are very, sometimes uncomfortable, but I my intention is to make people feel something, you know, like mm-hmm. we were saying before the break about, you know, mindless humor. I don't like it. I want you to feel something, even if it's anger, even if it's, you, even if you strongly disagree or you love it and you, you know, you want to hear more, like
an emotional just, reaction of any kind.
Emotional. Exactly. Exactly. That's the most important thing.
Did it take you a long time to get to that point in your comedy? Did you start out doing more traditional jokes at the beginning?
Yeah, you do more jokes. You kind of you learn yourself. You know, you figure yourself out. I did more like setup punch, more of a traditional setup punch thing initially, and then you kind of evolve into your own style.
How long did that take? That process of trying out jokes. Were you patterning yourself after anyone else?
I mean, I am genuinely influenced by Cadence all across all platforms. So, you know, Jack Benny, I think, has, you know, just this impeccable timing, as does Louis Black, as does, you know, B. Arthur, as the, you know, like, so, you know, Bill Cosby, you know, these people with great timing. So I am influenced by timing and I'm influenced by rhythm of other people. But like I said, I just try and keep it true to conversation. When you do stand up, a lot of times it's this journey in self-exploration where you're just trying to figure yourself out. And the more you figure yourself out and everything and thought and rhythm, then the more, you know, connects with the audience.
Did you have a twin passion for acting, or did you kind of fall into that because you were becoming well-known as a comedian?
I really love acting. I love it, a piece of advice that that Dave Chappelle said he heard from Richard Pryor was, in order to be a great stand-up comedian, you have to be a great actor first. And there is this bit of performance, to because even if you – even if the thought is new and fresh, there is a bit of performance to recreating that initial moment when you first had it, when you first felt these things. So there is a hint of acting. And when you're on stage, you're acting, you're producing, you're writing, you're directing. It is a one-man show.
Is it difficult to continue feeling whatever you felt when you started, you know, that stand-up?
Yeah,
do you have to get yourself back there?
For stand-up in general?
Yeah.
I love it. It's all thought by thought. And sometimes your thoughts aren't going in that direction. Over the summer, I'm so focused on making the show that I just stopped doing stand-up while doing it because all of my focus went into the show. And so, you know, and then sometimes you don't really have anything to say, anything to share. And I won't go up a lot of times on those nights when I don't have anything to say. But then once you have that thought and you know, it's the most exciting thing in the world, you kind of rush to the nearest microphone.
A lot of people probably know you from the film Neighbors, right? Would you say that until your show that debuts tonight on NBC, Gerard, that's the most high-profile acting gig you've had?
Oh, Neighbors? Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Really fun. Really fun.
And that Zac Efron, he couldn't be any dreamier, right?
You seen those eyes?
I mean, seriously. Look at that guy. Crazy, right?
Talk about those eyes. You know what it is.
Are you guys friends?
Yeah, he's a friend.
Don't continue this conversation, Bean.
If he asks you for his number, don't do that.
I gotta know. That's all.
Crazy stalker
guy. No, not at all. No stalking. Just a little bit of a crush. That's all.
No,
come on.
That's understandable.
Completely
understandable. No one's faulting you for that.
Right. Hey, speaking of friends of ours, though,
yes.
David Alan Greer has been coming on the Kevin and Bean Show for 25 years.
Really?
We love him, and we're so sad how many times he's come in because he's on another TV show that doesn't work. Please let this one work so that our man can continue to eat, because we'd love Dag and we want him to be working for a long time.
Well, listen, Dag is going to work as long as Dag wants to work. I mean, he's, I think, a genius. I think he's a brilliant actor.
He's brilliant. Fine. He's one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life.
I don't even like to apply the term legend, but I will say, like, because it's like he's still working and he's still creating new things, but I mean, already in his own time, you know, just, you know, I think a legend in comedy. He's so great.
You ever hear him on Carolla's podcast?
No, I haven't.
You can't believe how fast his mind works and how the extremes that he takes things. It's just incredible. He's one of the most creative people in the world. And you must be so excited to have him and Loretta Devine both on your show because they're both just legends.
It's an honor, yeah. It's a huge honor that they would even want to be a part of it.
Tell us about their characters, your mom's character and your
my mom
character.
Is a, and it's based on my real mom, is a, you know, God-fearing woman who is very opinionated. And same thing with my dad. He's also very opinionated. My dad's very open-minded, and so David and Loretta's characters play, you know, these people who are open to discussion. And when I grew up, everything was an argument. You know, we argued about everything from dessert to.
Was it fun arguing, or was it?
It was fun. Sometimes fun. It gets intense. I mean, and that's fun, you know. but it's a lot of times just fun. It's people that like anything like. A house of full of open minds, you know, and people willing to explore a subject. And that's the most important character trait of my family members, and that's the most important character trait of everyone on the show.
You wouldn't be the man you are today if you hadn't grown up in that kind of open thinking, say what you feel kind of family, right?
Exactly.
In real life, could you get a girlfriend as hot as your girlfriend on the show played by Amber Stevens?
Oh, man. I mean, I gotta check eHarmony for that one. I don't even know.
She's something else, Gerard. Yeah,
she's absolutely a beautiful woman and a great actress. And she's like, you know, so fun in the scenes.
Well, I don't care about that. I'm just saying. He has a show that comes on.
Here's the thing: you're gonna have to make a decision too between Zach and Amber because I can't.
Oh, don't make me do that.
I can't have you just going back and forth here.
I feel that.
I'm only giving you one phone number.
Okay. All right.
And you got to make a decision.
I will think about that.
It's Zach.
Well, it looks like a terrific cast, and it looks like a super fun show.
Thank you.
And what a look! You've worked really hard to get to where you are. They don't just hand out these shows. I mean, you just must feel so proud. Your family must feel so proud that you have this opportunity. Just to have an hour prime time across America tonight. It's awesome, dude.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's Jerry Lewis once referred to television as a miracle. And I couldn't agree more. It is just this miracle thing where you get to connect with people, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
9 o'clock and 9:30, two episodes of The Carmichael Show tonight on NBC. Gerard, nice to meet you, man. Thanks for coming in.
Nice to meet you. Thank you.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to The Kevin and Bean Show at 8:54.
What just happened, you guys?
Right? Everything's fine, Allie. Just calm down. Everything's fine. Adam Carolla, just after 9. Rob is here now. Time for the Showbiz Beat on a Wednesday.
Who annoys you? Who annoys you?
I know, Chip. We all feel that way about Bean, but I'm asking about in terms of celebrities.
Oh, well, obviously the KK. The KK is annoying.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about actors and actresses.
Okay.
A-list actors and actresses.
Well, there's... Josh Gad obviously is the worst
Stop
of all
it.
Of them.
Don't
He's got to be stopped.
This is a poll from Ranker.com.
Ooh, I love Ranker. I love Ranker. Nothing but lists.
Bean
Are
loves
you kidding
lists.
Me?
Can you imagine? Being on
best.
A site that has nothing but people ranking things in order? Oh, my Lord.
It's my homepage. Are you kidding me?
That's porn. That's Bean porn right there. As Bean so aggressively mentioned, Ranker is just listing things, just ranking things. Often they will put an online poll up to try to get a feeling of how America feels about various subjects. And this particular poll was the top 20 most annoying A-list actors.
I have a guess.
Let me finish first. The poll was based on over 63,000 votes.
Okay.
And they gave an option of 72 personalities from film and television to choose from. So the poll just closed, and we do have the top 20 here. We've got the results of the most annoying A-list actors and actresses, male and female actors. Now I will open the floor to guesses.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
These nuts
did not make the list.
That's too bad.
Gwyneth Paltrow, 10th on the list.
10th?
Just 10th. I found that shocking, right, too. Kevin, obviously, you will feel good about the fact, though, amongst men, she ranked number 3.
Okay.
Just behind Tori Spelling.
Okay.
All right. Who's annoying?
Among women top 10 picks, Gwyneth Paltrow also. Renee Zellweger.
Oh, okay.
Also in the top 10.
All right.
Jenny McCarthy.
Jenny McCarthy. I think this is all just A-list actors and actresses.
You did say that
yeah.
a couple times.
So okay. She does not qualify, but yeah, why don't you just not so much?
All right, how about
from your plane? How about I know Roz from Frasier's right around the corner, so I don't want anyone to get there. I know you do. We all love Perry Gilpin, but she would not be eligible to be on this list.
Ralph, I'm not sure if you would consider her A-list, but she certainly has a lot of box office success lately. How about Kristen Stewart?
Kristen Stewart, seventh on the list, Bean. She absolutely qualifies, yes.
Certainly annoying. I know that.
Although I watched her in American Ultra, and she turned it around a bit for
right?
me.
Right? That's
turned it around
saying.
A bit. Yeah.
All right.
Who else is annoying?
I gave you a little hint earlier, so I'm going to give you this one. But Tori Spelling was number two with men, but number eight overall on the list. Tori
A-list?
Spelling.
I don't understand that. She's not A-list.
Well.
Is she?
No. I can't even remember the last thing she was in.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's hard. Most of these people are.
How about the Scientology contingent? How about your Tom Cruise and your John Travolta?
Tom Cruise, number one on the list.
Really? I don't find him annoying at all.
Across the board.
Not a bit annoying to
most
me.
Most people who participated in this poll said Tom Cruise was the most annoying actor.
I think he's a terrific actor.
He ranks number one across the board with all demographics. What? Millennials, baby boomers, West Coasters, East Coasters, men and women.
What about
Adobe-Doo?
Adam Sandler?
Adam Sandler, third on the list.
Okay, good guess.
Third on the list.
Was there any traction for Travolta or no?
No, Travolta did not make the list.
Hmm.
Dick Poop.
Dick Poop, not on the list. We're running out of time, so I'm going to burn through it for you. 20th on the list, and I found this incredibly low. Reese Witherspoon. Only she should be. She should have a bullet. She should be shooting up. The hits should get larger as the numbers get smaller, and she should be further up on that list.
You'd like to see she and her man hands in the top five?
Easily.
All right.
Will Ferrell, 19th.
Wrong.
These people
list.
Can die.
Horrible.
Deaf. Stupid.
Right.
Dumb.
Dumb. Absurd.
Anne Hathaway, 18th.
Stop giving us names. You said Will Ferrell.
Anne Hathaway, 18th on the
Nothing
list.
Nothing wrong with Anne Hathaway, by the way.
Jim Carrey, 17th.
True.
Okay.
16th, Sean Penn.
Okay.
No.
15th, George Clooney.
No.
Who does Clooney annoy? How is that possible? See, America's dumb.
That could be people, the Sean Penn and the George Clooney, both of whom are great actor-winning actors.
But they're lefties.
Yes, that's what it is. I think that people don't like him because of their politics.
That makes sense. Eva Longoria, 13th.
What?
I don't know what she ever did to anybody.
Huh.
Renee Zellweger, 12th. Well, she's a scrunchy face. That is kind of bugs. Charlie Sheen, 11th.
Are there 10 people above Charlie Sheen?
Yeah, right?
Who remembered Charlie Sheen?
Paul Tro, as I mentioned, was 10th. Selena Gomez was 9th.
Wrong.
What?
I don't even understand.
She didn't even lick any donuts.
She didn't.
I don't know what's
true.
She did.
Nothing wrong with Selena.
Tori Spelling, 8th. Kristen Stewart, 7th. Will Smith, 6th.
Well, his kids.
Yeah, his kids.
I mean, come on.
Shia LaBeouf, 5th on the list.
Aw.
Well, I think it's, you know, he's in the news so much for other things non-acting related. I guess that's colored their perception.
Plus, he is a cannibal.
That's what I heard.
He is cannibal. That's true, yeah.
He's a Hollywood cannibal, Shia LaBeouf. Ben Stiller, 4th on the list. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think so.
Yeah.
I think I could see that.
Yeah. Adam Sandler, as I mentioned, 3rd. Only one woman in the top 5. She is number 2. Any guess?
I mean, the big names I'm thinking of, because a lot of these names don't make sense. You're Julia Roberts, you're Meryl Streeps.
If someone's annoyed with Angelina Jolie, they need to go straight to
Angelina
hell.
Angelina Jolie, number 2 on the list. Second on the list, Angelina Jolie.
Oh, my God.
I can't imagine what she did to anybody either. Unless
just
someone's just jealous
lives
of her
and
life
right?
and being
goddamn liberal, I'm telling you.
Being an ambassador to the UNICEF and, you know, saving Rwanda.
Is it political?
All those kids that aren't white?
Is it political or are all these people sort of trying to teach us how to live? Maybe it's that as well.
I think only by example.
I don't.
In Angelina
she's
Jolie's
not
case,
annoying to me
she's
at
like,
all.
I'm
that's
just
why...
doing wonderful things. Doing...
She's too low on the list.
Dave hates her. Yeah.
Wow.
She's number 2.
Wow.
She's too low on the list.
What's
for
wrong
that,
with Dave?
What's Dave's problem with Angelina Jolie?
Oh,
tattoos.
He's an idiot.
So what?
It is. You're laughing.
No,
he hates her because
that's
she's
the
tattooed.
Answer. He says she's not pretty.
Yeah, not pretty at all.
Yeah.
He's insane.
Yeah.
Right. And just to be fair and balanced, as we are here on the Kevin and Bean Show.
That's how we roll.
The actors who ranked lowest on the list?
So these are the least annoying people. These people were almost universally loved.
Okay.
Gene Hackman.
Okay. Who's retired and doesn't act anymore.
Matt Damon.
Sure.
Okay. Kate Blanchett.
Oh.
Tom Hanks. Jason Segel. People found okay. them not all annoying right. at all. Not annoying at all.
Those make sense.
Hanks, of course, makes sense.
Yeah.
Because he's perfect. Today's celebrity birthdays, Dylan O'Brien from Teen Wolf and Maze Runner. He's not on the list. He's not annoying. He's 24. Comedian John Mulaney is 33 years old today. Remember when they put that trick show on television, Mulaney, and they tried to kid us and pretend it was a sitcom? Those were good times.
Yeah.
I think they, I believe they thought it was a sitcom, Rob.
Come on, Bean, you're so gullible. They were punking us. They were punking us. He said, let's call this a comedy and see if anybody bites. I'm too smart for you, Fox. Macaulay Culkin's 35 years old today, as is Chris Pine. Not only is he Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
But he's also now going to be Steve Trevor in the Wonder Woman movie. Embarrassment of riches.
He's one of the stars of Wet Hot American Summer, too, the Netflix series. He's very funny on that.
Melissa McCarthy's 45. Adrian Young of No Doubt is 46. And Shirley Manson. Oh, Shirley Manson, how we love you. Love you. Come into the studio, Shirley Manson. She's 49 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Monday, Allie, you were a guest on the Adam Carolla podcast.
I indeed was.
Was that exhausting?
It was lovely. We talked about Kevin and cargo shorts, Bean and his pigs.
Here's the thing about being on Adam's show is that you don't have to actually say anything because Adam just talks.
He takes care of the business. Adam Carolla podcast available at adamcarolla.com and iTunes, wherever podcasts are found. You can also see him live on stage this Friday night at the Borderline Bar and Grill in Thousand Oaks with special guest Howie Mandel. That should be a fun show. Tickets available through adamcarolla.com. And don't forget September 3rd coming up, the Irvine Improv at 8. It's time for What's your take?
Adam Carolla, I want your take. I want it right now. Adam Carolla, use your wits and your know-how. Adam Carolla, what's your take on what is going on? Adam Carolla, what's your take? Let's get it on.
Adam, Lakers Carolla, back on the Kevin Bean Show. How are you, my friend?
Doing well.
Lakers truly is your middle name. I don't think enough people realize that's for reals.
It's as real as whatever you want to write into the empty box in between your two names when your parents were too poor and too lazy to give you an actual real middle name. You can write whatever you want in at the DMV.
Now, Adam, now that you're a rich Adam Carolla, do you take advantage of that and get the good seats and go see a bunch of Laker games throughout the season?
I went to one Lakers game and sat with our old friend Norm Pattis, and who used to run Westwood One, and Bill O'Reilly. There were two guys I sat on the floor with.
All right.
Ooh, nice.
And watched a game. It's the only Lakers game I've ever been to, and I sat on the floor, and the next week when I did O'Reilly's show, he was busting my chops. And he said, Carolla, out there in Hollywood, all your liberal Hollywood friends, how'd they give you a nice ribbon sitting on the floor with Bill O'Reilly? And I said, no, I just told him I was sitting next to my dad.
I love it. Well, listen, the reason I bring up all this Lakers talk is there's been a little bit of a controversy because Taylor Swift is doing 5 sold-out nights at Staples Center this week. And every night she's had all sorts of surprises. Last night she had Beck come out, for instance, and play with her. But she had a surprise of her own on stage Friday night when Kobe Bryant came out. And I think we have some tape of Kobe making an announcement that was a surprise to the audience and apparently to Taylor as well.
16 sold-out shows at Staples Center, which is the most of any artist ever. And you know, 16 is a very special number here in Los Angeles because 16 is the same amount of championships we have as a Laker family. To celebrate those championships, we do something very special. We hang banners. To reveal for the first time your own championship banner. It's going to hang here forever.
All right. So Taylor Swift has a banner at Staples Center celebrating that she has sold the most shows out at Staples Center. And a lot of people are saying, hey, Staples Center, that's not what the banners are for. The banners are for sports championships. What say you, Adam?
Say two things. First off, if Kobe and Taylor would make a homemade porn movie, we could break the internet, right?
Right.
That would be the time when we actually broke the internet. Yes, well, I have a couple feelings about this.
All right.
First off, as you know, I'm very big in this whole Black Lives Matter movement.
That's what you're known for.
Pardon the pun, tip of the spear.
Right.
The Black Lives Matter movement. And I've been protesting for years. I don't think it was 1871 all over again.
Hey, Adam, you may not understand. Adam.
He's a black man.
Hey, Adam.
They're numbers. They're hanging their numbers up as an honor to them for their contributions to the team.
I heard they hung Shaquille from the rafters.
That did not happen.
Just a jersey, a banner. That's
okay,
all.
Okay, but was he in the jersey?
No.
The point is, he wasn't, Adam.
Okay, I'm going to look into this. All right, you better pray you're right. I've been making a big thing over this.
Yeah. All right, let's assume that we're right about that. So what do you think about Taylor Swift getting a banner at Staples Center before the Clippers do, who actually play there?
I don't like it. I'm tired of her. I'm tired of the whole, like, girl power movement. It's done. We've lost the war. I can't go into a sports bar without hearing Fergie and Rihanna pumping through every speaker. Every trendy steakhouse has it.
I don't know if that's a girl power movement. I think those are just popular songs.
Popular in a Detroit sports bar with me and another 45-year-old guy sitting there?
You are not in a Detroit sports bar.
They really got to check their demo. And this part where, like, oh, she writes songs about herself, like her experiences, her breakups. Like, it's so noble. Really? So you don't want to write one about, like, Martin Luther King or social injustice or something? And by the way, she writes these songs. She was, like, 14. What's she supposed to write about? The coal mine collapsing of Vietnam? Why is it so noble? Yeah, you got dumped by John Mayer. So what? We've all been dumped by John Mayer.
Have we?
Well, most of us. Okay, he's dated most of everybody.
All right, so I'm going to put you down as a no for Taylor Swift. Are you also a no for the Staples Center decision then?
I want Taylor Swift, and I want all those poor black men taken down from the rafters.
You don't understand at all what's going on. All right.
Okay. Don't do that. It's 2015.
All right. Okay, good.
All right.
Can I give you a hypothetical?
Nope. Actually, we're out of time, Adam. The Adam Carolla Show will be live on stage Friday night in Thousand Oaks at the Borderline Bar and Grill with special guest Howie Mandel. That's going to be a great show. Also, Adam Carolla, September 3rd, 8 o'clock at the Irvine Improv. Tickets for both shows at adamcarolla.com. Don't miss Catch a Contractor Sunday nights at 10 on Spike. Have a great week. Do some research on that thing and get back to us, Ace.
You pray you're right.
All right, we will. Adam Carolla, what's
your take? 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. It's Kevin and Bean Show at 9:37.
We want you to go to a great concert this weekend featuring two great bands, Incubus and Deftones, together Friday at the Forum and Saturday at Irvine Meadows. We are giving away tickets, I think, on the radio, but I know we're giving them away through K-Rock's Instagram as well. So go there for details on how to score tickets to the show on Instagram at K-Rock. Ralph is stepping in now. Time for our final look at the showbiz being here on a Wednesday morning. What's going on?
First time that ever happened to me.
Where we were talking and you were supposed to be in here?
No.
Oh.
But first time I've ever been caught peeing.
Oh, okay.
First time I was ever in the restroom here in the song end. It's like, oh, well, that's ill-timed.
That's my cue.
So what's your move at that point? Stop?
Yeah.
Hurry up.
Clench and run.
Clench and run.
My patented clench and run move.
I like it.
So here I am, late, but better late than never, right?
So are you mid pee and you're uncomfortable now?
I'm going as we speak.
Okay, all right, that's fine.
Yeah. I wear the Depends, just in case. You never know. Hey, Woody Allen. Sure, he may like him young, but he likes him talented too. And so, looks like he said goodbye to Bruce Willis. Now, Bruce's camp is saying, while they were shooting Woody's new film, that Bruce had a scheduling conflict. See, he's due to star in a Broadway adaptation of Stephen King's novel Misery. You may remember the film with James Caan and Kathy Baker?
Bates, yes.
It's going to be a stage production done on Broadway. And there he is, in the middle of shooting Woody Allen's new film. And according to Willis's camp, he forgot he's supposed to be on Broadway. Do you hate when that happens?
Does that happen?
No. Someone's saying, wouldn't that schedule be pretty much apparent to everyone? Yeah. So there's another side of the story. Some are speculating. Some say they have inside information from the set, saying that Bruce was simply not working out. According to one source, he didn't know his lines. They tried using cue cards, but that didn't work. The cast were losing their minds, says one source from the set. And so they looking to replace him. Looking to replace him with another actor, which will happen so that Woody can stay on schedule and get his film done. You know, he does one a year. That's his thing. He's done it for a long time. That's
40 years or something like that. He doesn't miss. And don't you get the impression, Ralph, you know more about the Woodman than I do, that his set is like a Clint Eastwood set in that there's no nonsense, there's no drama. You show up, you do your stuff, you work a short day, and you're done.
Right. And
like, that's how he likes to make movies.
And according to people who have worked with him, he doesn't direct you, really. He thinks his job is done in the casting. If he thinks you are right for that part, he wants you to come in and do what you do.
I could direct that way.
And what he does is say... Action, cut, let's try another. That's pretty much it, until he lets you just work until he gets what he wants. And
that's incredibly frustrating for so many actors who are like, I don't know if I'm doing what he wants because he just doesn't talk to me, doesn't say anything.
Well, they say you know you're doing what he doesn't want because that's when he'll say something.
Mm. Right.
But if he doesn't say anything, then he's happy. And apparently he was saying a lot of things, which is not like him.
That's alleged.
Allegedly, it's what he's...
Bruce Willis might be difficult. I still think he's a very entertaining actor.
All right, then.
Okay.
There you go. There's Beans.
Kevin, I'm sure you're with me on that. Bruce Willis in a movie, that gets your attention, right? You like him?
Yeah, most of the time, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's good.
Yeah.
Hey, looks like The Biggest Loser needs a new host. Allison Sweeney's leaving the popular NBC reality weight loss competition program. She joined the show in 2007, after the original host, Carolyn Rhea, comedian, actress, she was the original host, but she's stepping down to spend more time with her son and her daughter, because they are fat. And they need her help.
Does it say that?
I'm assuming. Why else would she spend time with them? That's what she does, right? Doesn't she help fat people?
Well, I think she's a parent to them.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, she just wants to be with her family. So, looks like they need a new host. All right.
America.
All right.
Stop you're up
it.
For it?
I'll be there. Hey, you, lose some weight.
America has we'll not right tired of watching people go on a diet.
No, yet, they
right?
haven't.
That's still a show that's been on now for 8 seasons.
Listen, it is transformative. You can mock The Biggest Loser, and I do mock most reality television shows, but that Biggest Loser show is kind of touching because these people transform their lives. Mm-hmm. And they go back to their friends and family, and... The joy that is created by that weight loss and how they get the control over their lives again, the joy from that is matched only by the sorrow and heartache when they leave the show and gain all the weight back.
So. True. Do you think
were
a lot
going
of
going there, Ralph? I felt so good about it, and then there it was.
Do you think a lot of people love that show the same way they love watching shows where people make a lot of money and get rich because they wish it could be them? Because a lot of people are overweight. You think they look at it and they go, oh, man, that's what it would be like to lose that weight? That's so sweet.
I don't think it's envy as much as it is perhaps inspiration. It gives them hope and saying, well, maybe I can do that too. Of course, you can do that too if you sequester yourself on an island where everyone makes your meals and works you out.
That helps.
Right.
Guy cracking a whip over your head. Yeah, anybody could lose weight. The hard part is once they leave... Fat Island? I don't know where they filmed this.
I don't think it's Fat Island.
I forget where it is. But,
I'm pretty sure it's not.
Once you get back to your real life, that's when it's difficult to keep those good habits in check.
Sure.
You know, I love The Flash over in the CW.
Same.
They are adding even more characters. Boy, it's just been a big off-season for them. They've been adding a bunch of characters. Finally, Jesse Quick! Jesse Quick! We get Jesse Quick.
Okay.
Jesse Quick, another speedster. She's Jesse Chambers, but she has super speed powers just like The Flash. Only hers is from a special chemical formula that she takes. You know, she was the daughter of Johnny Quick.
Sure.
and Liberty Bell.
Obviously.
So, we're looking forward to that, aren't we?
Pretty my goodness.
Now, overload. And Bean, you must be very excited. Joy Behar is returning to The View.
I like her. Yeah, I thought she was an excellent host, co-host on The View. I guess I'm glad. I don't watch that show much anymore, but I guess I'm glad she's back.
Yeah.
I never watch the show either.
No. But apparently people who do are excited. So
good.
There's that.
They brought in some really underwhelming people in the last few years. So I think that people are saying, hey, they're glad that one of the folks who really worked out for a long time on that show is back.
Still got Whoopi, though, right? We still got Whoopi?
Yeah, you still got Whoopi.
All right, then. Good to go. And that was one for Bean. This is one for Allie. Mm. I don't know if you're sure if you're ready for this or not, Allie.
I don't know. Give it to me.
FX?
Yep.
Starting on noon, September the 7th.
Okay.
An Empire Marathon. All 12 episodes from season one aired back-to-back on FX starting on noon on Monday, September the 7th.
Oh, I'm going to need that week
She's
off.
She's going to need the whole week off.
To get you ready for the return of Empire on September the 23rd.
So good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cookie.
I want half that Empire you got.
No, Cookie. This Empire is for my sons. I'm going to make them step up and run the
But not
empire.
The gay one.
I'm going to run the empire. You don't say who run the empire. I helped you make this empire.
But you're in jail. Now you're out of jail. You want half my empire?
That's right. I want half the empire.
That's all I know about that show.
It's real good.
You got to watch, Ralph. You got to be watching Empire.
I feel like you'd like it. You
would
think
like
you'd
it.
Like Nashville, and you love Nashville.
And it's very similar to Nashville.
It's basically hip-hop Nashville.
Hip-hop Nashville.
So good.
And then you can, once you've started watching the show, then you can do the one-man stage production that we've been demanding.
I think I just did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've really done
it. It's a very short night of the theater, but people seem to enjoy it. Today's celebrity birthdays, garbage singer Shirley Manson is 49 years old today.
Bitch.
Hey,
no.
I will.
Oh, Rodney,
your
we will
ass,
not.
Rodney.
We absolutely will
you.
Not.
I will take you down.
Oh, my that's, God.
Yes,
really?
Yes, I will. And you and I will come to blows. I will not have you speak that way about Shirley Manson.
Oh, like hell.
Oh, you want a little piece of me? You bring it.
Cheesy.
She's not cheesy. She's magical.
Touch You're me, right. I'm going to scream.
Okay, listen. All right, you two. Listen.
Touch me, I'm going to scream.
Let one guy do that.
Why is Kevin playing so much Rodney?
Stop. It's not your thing. It's not what you do. Let the other one do it.
Moving on.
I started it. I know you did.
Losers.
Adrian Young is 46 years old today. Melissa McCarthy is 45.
Kevin, I've had it.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes.
I'm in so much trouble.
He speaks for me as well.
Cranky.
We're going to send Kevin to the state of Vegas and make him just live there.
It's a mess.
Chris Pine is 35 years old today, as is Macaulay Culkin from Home Alone. He sure stopped those guys from coming in and
sure
robbing
did.
His house, yep. didn't he?
He did. Were there three of those?
I believe there were three Home Alones, yeah. Mm-hmm. Home Alone so. Again, I believe, and then...
still home?
Still not home.
Could not be more home.
What the happened to my parents, I think, was the third one.
That's right. I'm running out of food. Send help. Comedian John Mulaney is 33 years old today. And Dylan O'Brien! Oh, Dylan O'Brien.
Oh, he's a teen wolf, don't you know? He also runs through a maze. He's as spry as a leprechaun, he is, Dylan O'Brien.
He's 24 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I got a lot of problems.
All right. Tomorrow morning, an all-new Kevin and Bean show. We have Diamond and Silk on the program
Diamonds
tomorrow.
Diamonds and Silk.
That's not... at all what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
They have a website called, what is it called? Weeby Sisters?
WeebySisters.com.
Yep.
Yeah, and they're fantastic. We're going to talk to them tomorrow. We also have Jim Rome talking sports and Whitney Cummings, comedian, in studio. That's tomorrow morning on an all-new Kevin and Bean Show.